gente hoy participar aquí parlamentar staff de Caribe is here with us. Let me first apologize for starting behind schedule. I had to rush to another meeting where I was invited. So I really apologize for that. So we have three items on our agenda. Is the briefing by the department on the progress that has been made on the BRRR recommendations. We will recall that in October, the October Parliament debated the BRRR process, and there were recommendations that were made by the various committees. Likewise, with the portfolio committee on human settlements. And the speaker, I think it was immediately after 2 weeks after the virtual process, MPBBS process, he circulated the correspondences to the various ministers. And I also received a copy of that memo that was circulated. So it means it was in November. I received a copy that was circulated to the Minister of Human Settlement by the Speaker in November. That after 30 days, you have to respond to the issues, recommendations that have been raised by the portfolio committee. So that is why we are here today. We all know that December we were not working, but the departments were working. January we were not working, departments were working. So that is why we believe that we should have responded a long time ago, because this was on the agenda for more than a month. So you should have rectified all those issues by then, and then you responded earlier. But we're not going to talk about it today. We want the report. And we don't expect people to say you have not done this, because it was a short notice. There was no short notice. Everything should have been done so that we get a response today. So you are more than welcome. The second one, last week we had a meeting with the department, the provincial department of Eastern Cape, in relation to this complaint. Seemingly we do have a lot of complaints that are raised by the contractors in the Eastern Cape. I don't know how the department is dealing with this matter. Because even before they come before us, I think the department has to play a critical role in monitoring and evaluating these processes in the provinces as well as the metros. We can't afford to deal with these matters whereas the department has not dealt with them. But unfortunately, the constitution gives us an obligation to make sure that we listen to the people who bring their complaints or petitions, and we have to address those. But similarly, the department is not doing your job. Or if you are doing your job, you are not doing it appropriately. So if citizens, they've got no other avenue now. You have closed your doors. The only door, the only hope they have is Parliament. Why do we have government, if that is the case? Government has to govern and solve the problems of the people. Ngiyasokolisa. I'm here near Eastern Cape, go to Eastern Cape and check all these challenges. What is the problem? What is the problem? Go to Eastern Cape. Yeah, there's no melinda about the contractors, there's Kalayo, everybody. And as Nayo in Inkela, we have to listen to them. But you are wasting our time. I'm not saying the community, the citizens, are wasting our time. They are doing what they are supposed to be doing to come to us if there is no response to our intervention by government. The people are wasting our time. It's our government, our colleagues in government. You can't. We can't. This is too much. You know, this is still a little bit of a plan because they are seen. I can't have one and the same complaint about the contractors that are being, victimized. Although we have not yet come to a conclusion. But seemingly there is a problem. There is a problem that needs to be addressed. So it's one of those issues and we're expecting, we told you that to the department that you must bring Nelson Mandela here. Because we don't accept in notion it in these projects were conducted, were undertaken by Tubelisha and the HDA. To us it means nothing. You can't have a project in a sphere of government, and that sphere of government has got no responsibility to that. Whatever responsibility. So that is why we said, talk to your colleagues. They must come here today. And that we also expect the province to come here. We told that this week we are dealing with this matter, but I can see that it's the national department only that is here. One of you can go and call them to find out where are the province and the metro. Oh, number three, Sesmislond, in New Town. Sesmislond, New Town. I'm not going to say anything, but what I know, we don't have a presentation with us members. The presentation was that was sent. I don't know how do they expect us, the presentation, to read through. So, you are welcome. I'll give the opportunity to the department to present the report on BTQR. Yeah, introduction. Call it on color to what's that?
Good morning, everybody. I'm Gloria Gorman, member of this committee.
Morning, everyone. I'm Jabal Sofri, with Whip of the Committee.
Mela. Molweni
nonke, ngumntu wabantu Matshoba, ilunga lekomiti. Ndiyabulela.
Sanibonani, uphethe Novalo Stoffe, ilunga lekomiti. Ndiyathokoza.
Dumela, Steven Mokgalapa, leloko la komiti.
Good morning. My name is Mbulelo Changana from the National Department of Human Settlement.
Good morning, honorable members. My name is Bonani Matasi, CFO National. Chair, I thought that my DDG would apologize for the DDG not being present today, but we are representing the department. Thank you.
Morning. My name is Nyame Kumbengo. I'm from the Department of Human Settlement.
Good morning, Chairperson, honorable members. My name is Julie Byatt, also National Department of Human Settlement. Thank you.
good morning. My name is Ndisiwe Ngongo, CEO, National Department of Human Services.
Good morning. My name is Kusuma Silo from the National Department of Human Services.
Good morning. My name is Ntosi from DG's office.
Good morning, everybody. Eileen Eskaba, Assistant to the Director General. Thank you.
Morning, everybody. Maurice Ichi, Director Management Accounting from the National Department.
Good morning. Ray van der Waals from the Department.
Morning, Inga Jan from PMG.
Morning, Kemba Kupula from the Communications Division of Parliament.
Morning, Chair members. My name is Natin Jangwan. I'm the Parliamentary Legal Advisor.
Morning, I'm Leopold Troy, the Director for the Portfolio Committee.
Morning, my name is Kudus Afafi, the Secretary. Okay, thank you so much. May I give the opportunity? I want to apologize on this day. Newtown Kudus has got a new presentation that came yesterday. So, otherwise, I'm going to let my lady in the Bunagai, if you say Telamakam. So, it has been reviewed. Thank you. Over to you.
Thank you, Chair. We first want to tell an apology for DG. He's been running around with the service level arguments on packet eradication the whole day yesterday. Number two, the item on Nelson Mandela. Chair, we wanted to be given a little bit of time to meet as the 3 spheres of government. We were overtaken by events. We didn't have enough time to meet with Nelson Mandela and meet with the province. We are aware about the transitional issues from and challenges that were encountered when the project moved from Kulilisha to HDA. We wanted to meet and discuss those issues. In my previous life, I also dealt with those issues in the Western Cape because Tbilisi was also involved in the management of the N2 Gateway project. So we want to be given a little bit of time to manage that with Nelson Mandela and with the province of the Eastern Cape. Coming back to the presentation, the budget review recommendations today, Chair, there's a, what we call the division of work amongst ourselves. The entire team is here. Julie will take care of the mining town part of the presentation. My colleague Mbengo will take care of the AG management report aspect of it. I will take care of accreditation and human settlements policies. The COO will take care of the vacancy rate part of it and office accommodation. I will also come back and present on the rural household infrastructure grant recommendation, plus the FSC part of it. Lucy will talk to the mortgage default insurance. Lucy, my colleague sitting over there, will deal with the MDI. And the CFO will talk to the extension of USDG to secondary cities. And the other parts of the presentation, closure of CERFCON, the utilization of the USDG, all of that will be taken care of by the CFO. And then I'll talk about the appointment of engineers and town planners, what we refer to as the professional resource teams. So that's how we have divided the work amongst ourselves. There are a lot of issues, so we thought that it's better to get the people who have the authority to talk about those issues, to present them. So it may come across as something a little bit clumsy, but allow us to manage all of that, and I will call that to the orchestra during the presentation. All right. Starting with the move to the next slide. The first item on the agenda on the presentation is the question of accreditation. We presented this item last week, but we will explain it again this week. that 8 municipalities have already been accredited for level 1. This is the status to date. And then 8 metros and 12 municipalities have been given level 2 accreditation, what we used to call level 2 accreditation. We signed an implementation protocol with all of these municipalities. Can I go back? An implementation protocol has been concluded with all of these municipalities, with 24 of the 28 municipalities already given level 2 accreditation. What is outstanding is the assignment of the 6 metros, and that is the part that we wanted to explain a little bit so that there is no confusion. When we started this process, we appointed a panel of accreditation members who helped us to assess all of these municipalities and look at the state of readiness of each and every municipality to be accredited for level 1 or to be accredited for level 2. We appointed them in 2009. We are now moving towards the implementation of the assignment framework, which is what we used to call level 3 accreditation. And this in simple language means that all of those 6 metros will have to be accredited or assigned with what we used to call level 3, or we now call it assignment. And the target date for that is the 1st of July, 2014. I will explain it later what it means in practical terms. This item comes up again under policies, and I'll come back to it again. One of the issues that the FSC have raised very sharply in their report is that we need to do something about the title deeds, the awarding of the title deeds. And they felt that the process as it is right now is a little bit cumbersome. In fact, it makes it extremely difficult for those title deeds to be awarded to the beneficiaries. Take the first bullet. Is exactly what the FSC has said. I think it's proper for me to read it first. It says, it was a policy requirement that the construction of the houses may not proceed before the properties are transferred to the beneficiary and registered in the deeds office. That's what we used to do in the past. But what became a problem is that the entire exercise became extremely slow. And MINMEC took a resolution that let's delink the beneficiary administration part of the housing program from the actual construction. And when we took that decision, I think it was MINMEC of 2007 or 2008, if my memory serves me well. I think it was 2007, yes. 2007, that decision was taken to separate the two because it was slowing the process down. We thought that it makes perfect sense that you deal with beneficiary administration part of it, and then you deal with township establishment and planning approval issues separately so that you don't delay the process. So that's when the process of delinking started. An alternative strategy, this current financial year, we thought we need to look at that in some provinces, Western Cape, Gauteng, and even Limpopo. They have started a process in their pipelining, or what we call the creation of the pipeline, or the housing pipeline. They started a process where they manage all of these processes upfront. You know the list of beneficiaries, you know the list of, you've dealt with the issues of subdivisions, township establishments, planning approvals, environmental approvals, all of those things that you need to do before you start constructing a house. Some of the provinces have mastered the art of that. The biggest challenge in most instances is in the upgrading of the informal settlements, and also in areas where some of the land ownership issues have not been clarified upfront, because some of the land may belong to a private entity or to a government department. And those processes sometimes take forever to be finalized. And that's why there was a recommendation to delay. Can we move to the next slide? Then another question that was raised by FSC is the question of the ministerial norms and standards. They have to be adjusted with effect from the 1st of April 2014 to comply with the national building regulations in respect of energy efficient building. The man who's sitting behind me, Louis van der Waal, was driving that process for us in the department. He was very relieved when MINMEC passed that resolution. We now have a resolution that talks to the new building regulations, what we call SENS 10400. This is replacing, in a way, it's called SENS 10400. Actually, it's a new building regulation that was passed by DTI about how we should build. It deals with issues of, in most instances, it does exactly what the SCCA used to do, the Southern Cape Coastal Conservation Area. But when it's hot outside, like it is in Cape Town over the last 3 days, the house is cooler inside because of the thermal functioning of the walls, the form of the special plastering that they put on the wall. When it's cold outside, the house is warmer inside. It maintains the heat, and that is why it meets the energy efficient requirements. So we call it 10400 XA. It's a new building regulation that has been passed by DTI. Municipalities have taken a conscious decision not to approve any new building plans if they don't comply with this building regulation, which then forced us to issue a new subsidy quantum. And that's why the minister has issued the new norms and standards that are talking to this. So it's applicable this year, 1st of April. We're doing away with the SSC, old SSCA way of doing things, because everyone will benefit from that new building regulation. It has pushed the quantum to more than, the subsidy quantum to more than 100,000 rands. I think it's about 110,000 rands. That excludes the geotech variances and other related variances. So the subsidy quantum has gone up. The houses that we were handing over yesterday in Delft, it complies, that house, those houses, they comply fully with the new building regulations, even though we're using alternative technology there. All of those houses that we handed over yesterday with the minister, they comply with the new building regulations. So this is the comment that was made by SFC as well about the new building norms and standards. I think we explained it last week as well. There was a question in the portfolio committee last week about the relationship between SCCA and the new building norms and standards. So the new regulations, they comply fully with what is required of us in terms of building. Only challenge, which is what made MINMEC to take a little bit of time to approve the new norms and standards, is that the cost of building that unit is going up, which then means that the numbers are going to come down because the budget is not growing significantly. So you're increasing the subsidy quantum from 66,000 of the top structure to about 110,000, which then means that the numbers, you're going to have to review your targets going forward. That's the only challenge. The MECs were not very comfortable with that arrangement, and their view was this would have a huge impact on the delivery figures. But the most important thing is to deliver quality. I think we're not interested in, yes, we need volumes, but those volumes must be of quality. All right, then the continuing with the human settlements policy, a question about the backyarders, what are we doing with the backyarders? I think that was raised by FSC as well. SALGA and the department are working together on this one. I want to state that we're not starting from ground zero on this item. Gauteng is way ahead of most provinces in terms of dealing with backyarders. I think the Western Cape has started in places like Fredericton. They've started the backyarders program as well 2 years ago. I think Nisner wanted to pilot one of the projects as well. What we wanted to do is to come up with a standardized approach for the country as a whole as to how we deal with backyarders. If you're providing a service stand or you're providing only basic services, what do you do and how do you fund that in terms of the quantum? If you're providing a top structure in the backyard as Gauteng is done in some areas in Soweto? How do you find that? It has its own challenges, if one has to state up front, that that program has its own challenges, because when you issue a subsidy, this is the dilemma that Gauteng was faced with, you issue a subsidy to the landlord who owns the stand, and if you issue it to the landlord, isn't that double dipping? Because that landlord has received a subsidy in the form of EDBS, if it was a provincial or a municipal stock. So we're going to have to deal with all of those issues. And also the tenant landlord relationship, which I think the new rental bill does cover that. You know, in fact, it's one of the most progressive bills that I think we've ever achieved. My colleagues don't agree with me on that one. Because it regulates the relationship between the backyarders as well and the landlords, because there's a lot of abuse there, because those backyarders who are renting are not accommodated and they are not treated in the same way as other tenants. So we think that the new bill, the new rental bill, will assist in managing and regulating issues in that space, so that people don't get kicked out, because you know that there is a formal arrangement between the tenants and the owners of the houses, the backyarders and the owners of the units. So we're comfortable that the rental bill will be able to deal with those issues. We should make it easy for us, maybe to issue the subsidy directly to even to the tenant if there is a need for that. But those mechanisms and those instruments are things that will help to ask SALGA and the departments to come up with. But we started that exercise, and some provinces have done some pilots. We will look at those pilots and see if we can come up with a national framework. At this stage, I'm going to ask Mr. Mbengo Nyameko, my colleague, to lead us on the AG management report.
Thank you. With regards to the management or the report of the AGJ, the department develops an action plan immediately after the audit. The action plan is usually based on the final version of the management letter from the Office of the Auditor General. What we have done in the recent years is that once we finish it, we submit it to the AG for their comments and for them to peruse it and to raise whatever issues they want to raise. And on a monthly basis, this action plan is forwarded to all managers, and they are requested to update it in terms of the actions. The Office of the of Internal Auditors then do a follow-up and verify the actions people are indicating that they have actually done. And the Internal Auditors then report to the Executive Management on whatever their findings are on those actions. The process of managing it, collating the inputs from various people, is done from the Office of the Chief Financial Officer. I must also add, Chair, here that what we have now realized is that developing an action plan after the audit, to some extent, does not help much, because the audit only gets finalized July, August. And when you start then developing an action plan, the end result is that even some of the findings will then emerge in the following financial year. So what we have decided is that we will start developing the action plan during the audit. And when findings are raised by the AG, as they do the audit, we will then update the action plan. As a result, for the current financial year, which is ending in March, we have already opened the action plan. The Office of the Auditor General has already started doing the audit. They are currently busy with an interim audit. And as they raise the findings, populating the action plan and addressing the findings they are actually raising as we proceed. We think that that will help us in actually addressing on time the findings by the Office of the Auditor General. With regard to the appointment of consultants here, the appointment of consultants in the department is approved by the accounting officer. The National Treasury has in January this year issued an instruction note on this issue, and they have indicated that before consultants get appointed, the departments need to ensure that there is a gap analysis done. There's got to be an indication on why is it necessary that consultants be appointed. And so we now have to comply with that, and we ensure that before a consultant is appointed, a submission has got to be forwarded to the accounting officer, and any unit requesting appointment of consultants has got to indicate in reasons why, what are the shortages in terms of skills. I must also add here on this issue that the rate and the vacancy rate is reducing, one hopes that the appointment of consultants also will be going down, because we believe that the high vacancy rate has impacted on the appointment of consultants. And another, the last issue on this chair is that what the department has been doing is that the supply chain management reports on the quarterly report of the department, all consultants appointed during that quarter, just to highlight this issue so that we can be able to monitor it as we go. Thank you, Chair.
That takes us to the next item, which will be presented by my colleague, Ms. Wong, on the vacancy rate.
Thank you. Chair, this is the same report that we presented last week. What I can just emphasize here is that the establishment of the department is 804. The vacancy rate that we see there reflected as 19%, it translates to the vacancies that amount to 152. In quarter three, we were sitting at 25% of the establishment, which means we were sitting with the vacancies of 201. During quarter three, we confirm appointments of 49 people. That translates to the 6% that we reported last time. In terms of the factors that are delaying us, it's in terms of in certain instances we are not able to find the suitable candidates, which means we need to re-advertise. Also, we are competing with the private sector for some of the scarce skills, and our budget doesn't allow us to recruit, to have access to those scarce skills. There is another matter which is now emerging, that of the disclosure on the criminal records when we do the verification after we have selected the suitable candidates. Then we discover that the applicants, they don't disclose their criminal records, which means we need to go back and verify and then also inform them, so that then we can also move to the next one. Otherwise, then we will be challenged why ours, the first candidate was not recruited. The last bullet, Chairperson, it shouldn't have been there. This is an issue that is historical now. We used to have a problem with the verification of qualifications with the SACA, but we have since signed the SLA with the South African Qualifications Authority, where we get our response within 2 days. So this issue has already been dealt with. It's no longer a challenge.
No more challenge.
No.
Chair, before we move to disaster funds, I think it's proper to contextualize the story about the vacancy rate. I think the bulk of those posts are in the program and project management unit, which is the unit, the new unit in the department that I'm heading. And the majority of them are specialized posts. I think one of the things that we always forget is that we're in the built environment. And the skill that we are targeting is the same skill, the engineers, the town planners. For instance, Ms. Myers has to go back again, Julie, who is in charge of the program and project planning unit, has to go back again for 3 director positions in her company. Because the requirement is that we need a town and regional planner. And most town and regional planners don't come cheap. And most of them would prefer to work for private consulting firms because they pay them very well. So we have a challenge there. I just want to contextualize this without giving it out as an excuse. It is not an excuse. I think we need to go and find the resources. But the challenge is we compete with the ESCOMs of this world. We compete with the DBSEs, with all of the other institutions that are paying very well. Like the lowest paid town planner in some of the ESCOM operations will be getting around 800,000 rands minimum. And you're only talking about the specialists, you're not talking about the senior town and regional planners. And all of them have to be registered with the qualification, with the professional body. If you're not registered with the professional body, we don't consider you. It is a requirement. And we don't want to lower the standards because it will affect the quality of the plans that we want to assess with provinces and municipalities. And lastly, the question about the... We will come back to this one about appointing the consultants as well. In most cases, some of the consultants that we're bringing in are consultants who are in the scarce skill category. Again, for instance, we will be concluding a procurement process on the professional resource teams. And these are town and regional planners, these are engineers, these are architects, these are all your built environment specialists that we cannot afford to keep them within the organization. And besides, we need them for project specific, so it may be more expensive to keep them in-house. So we have to enter into some kind of an arrangement with service providers because we are, when it comes to pricing that part, we are the ones who price it when you get them in, because these are gazetted fees. But if you deal with them as individuals, then it may be costly for the department to do it. I'll explain this again when we get to the appointment of town planners and engineers. There is a slide that talks to that.
The next part
is going to be presented by my colleague, Lucy Masilo. This is our chief investment officer.
Thanks, DG. The disaster relief fund was added to the human settlement development grant. The initial budget that was added was 299 million. That fund was earmarked for the repair of the infrastructure that was damaged by the floods in January and February 2011. That allocation of 299 million was allocated to different provinces except for Western Cape. Then during the budget review in December, we received an additional funding of 44 million on the adjusted budget for the disaster relief grant, and in there, Western Cape was included. And the total allocation for the 2014 financial year is 343.4 million, of which 36.2 million has been spent as of the 1st of January 2014. Eastern Cape are the highest on the spending with 76.1 million, while Gauteng did spend 60 million on the disaster relief. The assessment was done by National Disaster Management Center of the areas that were targeted that these funds will be able to spend on. And the provinces were given, and the allocation letters did specify that the disaster relief fund should be used specifically for those areas that were targeted by floods. Thanks.
The next item is about office accommodation. I'm aware that you had specific questions about this item last week, but the CEO is going to respond to some of the questions that you have or concerns. So,
Chair, this is the same report that we are presenting here under office accommodation. In a nutshell, there is progress that has been made with regards to this area. As we indicated last week, that the process of refurbishing the 260 Justice Mohammed is expected to be finished by end of May, which takes us to the next phase where the department expects to occupy the building, which has been eluding us for so long, by end of June 2014. There's just one issue that we are grappling with the Department of Public Works, which I think it will be resolved before June, is the fact that there have been invoices. The department has been billed for both 240 and 260, which was incorrect because the arrangement was that we will start paying for the 260 Justice Mohammed upon occupation of the building. Now what needs to happen by the Department of Public Works is that they have to generate the credit notes to reverse the invoices that they have created, so that we are only expected to pay for the 240 and then 260 only upon occupation. This matter, Chair, has now been escalated also to the DG level, but we are happy with the progress that has been made thus far. Thank you.
The next item is about the mining towns, Chair, and I'll ask my colleague Julie Bayat to lead us there.
Thank you, and thank you, Chairperson and honourable members. May I just start off by saying that, Chair, at our last presentation, we actually gave you a report on three of the mining towns, that was Rustenburg, Moses Kotane, and Manibeng. And what we also did was on Rustenburg, we gave you a report on six of the projects, and three for Manibeng and four for Moses Kotane. What we did subsequent to that, Chairperson, is that we went back to Rustenburg, and particularly with respect to the fact that Marikana is located in that area, we started to look at what are the other projects that they are working on. So we delved into which other projects are they actually planning, and we started to put that into our report as well. So what you'll find in this report, Chairperson, is that there are projects that are being, our report includes projects that are being planned as well as projects that are being implemented. The second thing that I just want, before I start the presentation, Chairperson, is just to indicate that what we're doing today is that we're reporting again on Bojanala. The same process of ensuring that phases 2 and 3, those are all the other mining towns, that they give us full details of all the projects, not only that are being implemented, but that are being planned as well as being implemented. So that process is underway right now, and this report does not include that because that process is still ongoing. And also we need to get from them what are the human settlement implementation plans. That is also underway, Chairperson. So the report today includes the Bojanala district. Okay, thank you. Chairperson, the first project that we're talking about is in Rustenburg. We're talking about Guanacacho, which has been planned for 515 units. It's an upgrading of informal settlement project with a budget of 23.2 million. To date, they have spent 20.8 million. The start date of this project was around February 2013. The expectation is that this project ought to be finished at the end of this month. However, there are some issues on this project, and while the services are complete, the outstanding service on this is the outfall sewer, and this is problematic, and until and unless that gets sorted out, you can't have people staying in there if the outfall sewer is not sorted out. So to date, there are 402 foundations, there are 342 wall plates, there are 340 roofs that have been put on, but the insulation of that sewer line is holding this project up. So until that happens, Chairperson, we're not going to be able to finalize that. In terms of Meriting 4 and 5, 1,590 units have been planned. This is also an upgrading informal settlement project. The budget on this one is 40.6 million, and today 38 million has been expended. The expectation is that that project ought to have been complete by March 2014. Here again, installation of the internal services done. Top structure construction, 841 have been put into place.
Our problem here is that, as you will see, these projects are not rolling with the speed that we'd like it to, because if we're going to have vacant houses with no water, no sanitation, these houses are going to be vandalized and people are going to move in, and it's really problematic. So here we do have lack of bulk water issues. We've had interactions with the Rand Water, and they said to us, look, there's just no sufficient water in their reserves. And also the other issue is that we need, the municipality has to locate the beneficiaries, because approval for this project was granted way back in 2004. So there's been that kind of difficulty of trying to get them as well, get in touch with the beneficiaries, but that process is underway. Chairperson, in terms of the rural project, which is the rural development for 550 units, also in Rustenburg for a budget of 3.8 million. This commenced in June 2012. The expected due date, completion date, was December 2013, but this has also been a bit slow and it's still under construction. The problem here is that they're still trying to finalize 30 beneficiaries who need to be approved before they can be registered on the HSS. In terms of Mbekisam, that is the National Upgrading Support Program. This is the process that's underway for 1,500 units. This is being planned for March of this year for completion of that component by November of this year. The planning process is underway, and this project is on the business plan since 2014-15. So this can get going. For the Kekeng, which is also enough for 1,200, commencement date to February. For August completion, this process is underway, but this one has not been put onto the business plan at this point in time. There are some issues on this project. The Sierra Lane, which is 100 units, it's a FLIS project, it's for 6.8 million. This has been put on hold, Chairperson, because there are problems about finalizing those beneficiaries. The Sierra Lake 800, which is for 1,100 units, also an informal settlement upgrading, a 26.4 million project. To date, 13.5 million has been utilized. The project proper is to start in June 2014. That's a construction issue. This is about relocating informal people who are living in the informal settlement at Yizo to Sierra Lane. This work has already been done as far as social facilitation and the profiling, and the municipality now has to relocate those beneficiaries. The province has already appointed the developers, and the top structure construction is due to start as soon as the relocation is complete, and also subsidy administration. All of these issues are underway, so it's not as if this project is static. Chairperson, as far as Boitekong 16 is concerned, this is a project that spans 3,400 units. It's an integrated residential development program with a budget of 900 million. It's due to commence March 2014, completion July of 2016. Here the municipality has identified a developer, but the contract has not been signed at this stage. There are some issues that between the developer and the municipality. The problem again here is insufficient bulk water and electricity, but planned for the upgrading has commenced. The difficulty in this project, Chairperson, is that funding for the infrastructure is insufficient, and they're saying to us we need to try to assist them with talking to DCOG as far as MIG is concerned, because this project, this area does not get USDG, and we need to ensure that there's more funding that's being allocated into this area. As far as Nganeng is concerned, for 1,000 units, this is a full subsidy project that's being planned. It commenced April 2014, completion June 2015. This is a development of the plans by NAS. This process is underway, and the issue here is land, and these land issues need to be resolved in order to ensure that this process can proceed. There's a CRU project in Rustenburg for 200 units. It's rental. To date, it's a 74.5 million rand project. To date, 66.5 million has been expended. The expectation is that the project will be completed in March of this year. progress is underway here. It's been going well. 8 of the 14 blocks have been roofed, and the anticipation is that it should be ready by the end of March, and we're going to check on that front to see that those rental units are complete. Chairperson, and Chusandeng, which is Wokamoso, this was the 4,000 units planned in phase in the project, and in the first phase, there are 800 that have been planned. It's an integrated residential development program project. This has been a difficult one because there's no budget allocated at this stage. This is supposed to be a partnership between Rustenburg Province and the Rustenburg Platinum Mine, and Rustenburg is the developer. The MOA has been signed by the municipalities, and on this project, the technical task team between the three spheres of government has been formed already, and the technical task team meets regularly. There are difficulties, Chair, on this project about the EIA and the record of decision for the township establishment. Also, the problem is about the lack of bulks and the need for the bulk sewer lines. There have been engagements that have started, and we also need to establish the cross syndication and the source of the funding. So there's still quite a bit of work that needs to be done on this project. So the task team with the developer and with the mine also be sitting together just to try to ensure that some of the issues can be sorted out on this one before we can continue to plan properly for this. Marikana Extension 2 is for 1,200 units. It's an integrated development program unit plan. It's the budget on this one is 964.7 million. There's nothing in place. This is the project on which Lonmin donated 50 hectares of land, and this land is fully serviced already for housing development, for 860 units. A deed of donation was signed between Lonmin and Province. The ACA has already done a due diligence on portions of the land that are being donated by, including this one, as well as land in Moinoi, which is in the Madibeng local municipality. And also, this is the other project that the task team is dealing with, and it starts to look at all the planning processes and needs regularly in order that we can ensure that we keep track of the progress on these projects. The next one is Sunway. It's a project in Madibeng, Chairperson, for 1,000 units. It's an integrated development program project with the 86.2 million budget. To date, 46.5 million has been expended. This project is currently under construction. This is a project that the ministers, when they visited Bojanala, this is one of the projects they saw. Again, on this one, while the internal services are complete, the outfall sewer is not quite complete at this stage. In terms of the top structure construction and the you'll find that some of the things I read, and this is to show you the latest numbers. So as far as foundations are concerned, 975 are in, 890 wall plates, and to date there are 440 roofs. The affordable housing component of 700 is a partnership between Hernik and Madibeng Municipality, and an MOA between the parties has been signed. This is also a project that sits with the task team. Their discussions, essentially what happened is that while there were problems with bulk water, that has been resolved. As far as the bulk sewer is concerned, the municipality made provision to ensure that there's a plant that links this project with the plant to assist with the sewer treatments. The application has been made already to ESCOM for the installation of an electrical substation, and the Department of Energy has committed funding for this project for switching stations. Chairperson, on the Mamba informal settlement, this is for 500 units on the UISP. Again, this is a project that's in the process of being planned. The budget for 11.7 million has already been budgeted for this project. This project aims at formalizing the Mamba informal settlement. This was stalled because there were problems with the township establishment processes, and because the mine had objected because they said that there was the development was too, was within the mine's buffer zone. However, there were a lot of engagements with the mine, and what has happened is that the mine has recently actually lifted that, so this process is, the processes can now continue. And it is, we're actually hoping that the township establishment will be established, will be finalized shortly. Chair, as far as the bonus is concerned, for 2,100 units, this is a rectification project with 2,000 units were blocked. This project commenced in 2000 with the construction of 2,100 units. What's happened is that now the province is undertaking rectification work, and some of the incompleted units are currently being, are in the process of being completed. The quantity surveyor has, the report has been complete, and the province is now analyzing that and is drafting the terms of reference for the developer to be appointed. Chair, in Moses Kotane, there's source post 1 for 921 units. This is also rectification full subsidy. The budget was changed to 20.3. To date, 5.2 million has been extended. Again, the expectation is for March 2014 for completion. However, the project is now, as it's been resuscitated, the developers have been appointed, and we're to date, until the end of January rather, there were 85 completions. So this project needs to be expedited between now and the end of March. The source for phase 2, 900 units, the full subsidy program, also 17.7 million, and on this project nothing has been expended, but the beneficiary verification has been, that extension of zero is not correct, because this is the one that has been, there has been work, and that's a mistake. We just need to correct that one, because 700 of these are in the process of being completed, and on this one, it's a beneficiary verification process that's in place. In the Mabalapudi part of this project, project 12, only 12 of the 2,000 units are still outstanding. For Matau, it's also 200 units. It's a full subsidy project. This one here also is a 6.8 million project. Commenced last year in November. The expectation is that it will go into March 2015. The developer has been appointed, the NHBRC also, the enrollments and the enrollments has happened, and construction was to commence in November, and the contractor is on site currently, so that process is underway. As far as Moses Kotane 1200 is concerned, this is also a full subsidy project with 13.2 million, commenced in November last year, Chairperson, and the thing about these projects is that they are projects in a number of villages throughout the area, and this is in 12 villages are affected here, and two developers have already been appointed, and the NHB and the house, the project is enrolled by with the NHBRC. Thank you, Chair.
All of these projects, Chair, are in the business plan of the Northwest Department of Human Settlements. So we meet with them on a quarterly basis. We prioritize this in our performance review session. The last one was yesterday. We asked them serious questions about the performance of some of the projects. But the biggest challenge in this region is the question of ARC, and I think my colleague Julie has highlighted that point, that perhaps we need to work with Water Affairs, because they are administering the ARBIC grant, which deals with the funding of the bulk water supply. And the other part is the internal connection infrastructure, retribution. Some of the projects are not moving because the MIG that most of these municipalities, Matiben, Moses Kotane, and Rustenburg, the MIG component that they are getting is not adequate. So that's something that we looked at, we discussed last year as members of the executive management team in the department. And we wanted to find a way with COCTA to prioritize all of these areas, because it's no use to categorize a project as a priority project or as a mining town project if the funding is not going to be part of it. The next item, Chair, is about rural household infrastructure grants, which is targeting the 23 rural municipalities. To date, we have approved 19 business plans that are submitted for approval. There was one part which was meant to be signed by the CFO, and that is about the disbursement of the grant. I think it's proper for us to state upfront that, and I know this is the point that you've raised as well yourselves about how we manage issues of capacity within some of the district municipalities. The last thing we want is to disperse the grant to a district or a water service authority that has received a disclaimer. So if there is a water service authority that has received a disclaimer, it means we must put measures in place and make sure that we follow the money and we administer the grant with that particular municipality. I think the AG is very clear about that item. But those 19 business plans have all been approved by the DG. There was a little bit of a hurdle because Treasury and the sanitation component, they converted the amount to the local municipalities in the beginning and not to the water service authorities. For instance, in this city, most of the water service authorities are district municipalities and not local municipalities. So we've corrected that, and the amount will be dispersed directly to the WSEs. So we don't see any challenges to date in terms of spending that amount of money. Here, Chair, these are the items that were raised by the FSC. We've talked about some of them, but I think it will help us to go through them line by line. So FSC came to you and they presented their review. The first bullet is about the Financial and Fiscal Commission, the research that they have conducted on housing, and they used FinMark. FinMark is one of the institutions that we have used ourselves to research about the performance of LISP, the performance of the subsidy, the grant itself. Keisha Rust is one of the specialists there. In fact, she's running a blog in the internet. I think she's doing an amazing job for all of us in explaining the housing policies. We're not paying her for that work, but she's explaining all the housing policies, how they work. You can Google it and look at her website as well. She's one of our partners. So we've worked with FinMark, and we agree that the work that FinMark has conducted, it makes perfect sense. I think one of the things that FinMark has stated in that research, in that report, which was also presented to MINMEC, is this whole question about the review of the preemptive right clause and the clawback clause. And there's an ongoing discussion around how we deal with that particular item, given that now the funding, the private funders are in that space. I think your comment was that we need to keep a healthy balance there, because there was a reason for the preemptive right clause to be there. They've done a lot of work, research work, international work, as well as to how to manage issues around the preemptive rights clause. We will work with them. So we welcome the report that FSC has presented in this regard. They went further, the third bullet, that's the only bullet where we tend to disagree with them a little bit. We don't disagree with them wholly. I think what they did there is a straight line analysis of the performance of the grant. Let me read it so that we are on the same page. They're saying that the results of the study revealed that there is a discrepancy between the growth of the budget allocation versus units delivered. When you look at it at face value, you will say, yes, there is. The budget is going up, and the units are not going up with the budget. They're going down. But we need to look at the time sector in all of these areas. Because when you do that analysis, it makes sense to start from 1994 and break it into two, maybe say 1994 to 2005 to date, because you will see all of those changes. In 2005, we slowly moved from a 36 or 33 square meter house to a 40 square meter house. So the size of the house went up in 2005. Even though the budget was going up, but the quality and the size of the house has moved. But you will also notice that
the subsidy quantum as well. If you look at the subsidy quantum in 1994 and the subsidy quantum in 2005, it also went up significantly. Subsidy quantum at some point was 23,000 a unit. It moved to 33,000 or 36,000, and it went up to 66,000. So as much as the budget is going up, but it is going up with the subsidy quantum, because the subsidy quantum is not staying stationary, it's not standing still. But you will also notice that in 2005, we also started utilizing most of our programs. What we used to call the hostel redevelopment program was replaced by CRU, the community residential unit, and we fund all of it from the fiscal. It's one of the most expensive programs because it's not a mixed funding arrangement. All of it, the capital grants, the funding of the CRU comes from the subsidy corner. So you will see that we have increased the number of CRUs post 2005. As much as the budget is going up, it's going up with all of these programs now running at full steam. The quality of the house is also going up. So we felt that SSC should have done a little bit of qualitative work in analyzing this part. Because if you simply say the budget is not going up with the units, then you need to tell us whether you have looked at other issues as well. This question was also raised by most of the contractors in this province. They called an urgent meeting because they felt that the numbers countrywide are not going up. When we explained it to them that the subsidy quantum at some point, you know, for services only, was 11,000, and it has moved now to 35,000, so the services part of it. And that excludes your geotech variances, because for geotech, it means you need to increase, you can increase it even up by 15%. So when I met the Bongani Kumalo of FSC a week ago, we had a discussion and I raised these issues with him, and I said, I would want you to look at the qualitative aspect of this assessment of this study, so that we are on the same page in terms of all of these other variables or other factors that have made it difficult for us to increase the numbers. But you will also recall that we also buying a lot of land. Now, we're buying land from state-owned enterprises, we're buying land from private sector, and those factors are not necessarily taken into consideration. There's also the planning work, there's also the project management fees, the OSCAP. So there's a lot of money that does not necessarily give you a unit, and that needs to be accounted for. And in their analysis, I don't think they've taken that into consideration. So we're not criticizing them. We're not saying that they haven't done a good job, but we're simply asking them to factor in all of these other variables, and they have agreed to do that. Then the last bullet is about the recommendations that they've made. First one is about accreditation. I think we've talked about this one. We've gone shocky in explaining this one. Just to explain it again, that the 6 metros which will be accredited, we're targeting to assign those metros on the 1st of July. The operational budget or the capacity building grant will be dispersed to them on the 1st of April. The CFO will disperse the capacity building component so that they are able to deal with issues of asset transfer. Remember, when you accredit, some staff members are going to move to the metros. So they need to manage that, because if they don't manage it, we will run into trouble with the trade unions. The second part is asset transfer. Staff transfer is the first one. The second one is asset transfer. The third one is project transfer. In some cases, they will not transfer those projects. But the budget, the 300 million rand that Treasury has put aside, will help them to deal with all of those issues in the next 12 months. But on the 1st of July 2015, we will then disperse the capital budget, the capital component, that is the HSDG component, directly to the metros. And our assumption is that we will have enough time, we will have 12 months to deal with all of those teething challenges about assets, about projects, and about staff members over the next 12 months. What we didn't want to do, which is why the Director General wrote to all the HODs to ask them to put the process on hold, what we didn't want to do is to move with speed and start dispersing the capital component before we have finalized all of those issues. And that is why we're putting first things first. The DJ was not very popular. When he asked all the AGODs to put, and the executive directors and metals to put the process of assigning, because the initial date was assigning all the metals in February, that is this month. This year we felt that it is too soon for us to do that. But that's the decision that we need to take ourselves as a department, as a lead department. Treasury was also not very happy with us that we're delaying that part, and I'm sure you've heard them making a lot of noise about why we're delaying the process. Our fear is that if we go ahead now and we assign, there will be no doubt that the numbers will be affected, the delivery numbers will be affected. There's no doubt that all of those issues about staff transfer will come to the fore. So we need to manage all of those transitional issues, and we feel that 12 months will give us enough time to deal with that. The second bullet that they are making is that government should consider the funding implications of any further policy changes. I think that is a principle of public finance. When you introduce new changes, you need to think about financial implications. I raised this question, this point, with my colleagues on Randall Bill. As much as we embrace that bill, I think it's a brilliant piece of legislation. We need to think about the financial implications, because my fear is that some of the municipalities are not going to fund the structures and the institutions that we want to create in all of those networks. So there will be some financial implications. Already, if you look at the tribunal, the volumes are high that they are dealing with. The case volumes is high. So when we go and extend the coverage to municipalities, we must think about how to fund that, and it's going to come back to us. So for any policy that you introduce, there will be financial implications. I think that's common sense. They're simply asking us to cost it properly and think about how to fund those implications. And we agree with them there. The third bullet that FFC is raising is that consideration should be given to linking new housing subsidies with the municipal infrastructure grant. If you look at the metros that are receiving USDG, the bulk challenge, remember in the past all the metros were complaining about bulk funding of the bulk issues. Right now, the challenge of bulk in most metros is becoming something of the past, because they use the USDG to fund all of those bulk issues. If you take a Tequila Metro, they came, I think they presented to you. They have more than 11 schemes, bulk schemes that they are funding out of USDG, which is making it easy for them to kickstart some of the new developments in Durban North and in other areas. So the USDG, the fact that USDG is now linked with the HSDG, it makes it easy for planning in all of those metros. Now they're asking us to do the same in all the other secondary towns, like Rustenburg, Blackstock, and other areas. The CFO is going to touch on that. I think there is a presentation slide which talks to how to extend USDG to other secondary towns. Because the thing about linking MIG, because those secondary towns are getting MIG, if you link it to the housing grant, it makes it easy for you to do your planning properly, to create your upstream pipeline of projects so that you don't struggle with issues of bulk in the year of implementation. You deal with bulk issues, you increase the capacity. We looked at Mangaung a week ago. They made a presentation to us about how they deal with issues of bulk water, issues of bulk sewer. I think they're doing a stellar job right now. I'm very impressed with the planning. For instance, they have increased the capacity of the bulk sewer in Stepwater, in Butabelo, and in Naval Hill. So all of that is funded from the USPG grant. Now, if you extend that principle to all the other towns, it would mean that it's going to be easy for the human settlements construction part of it, or the pipeline, the human settlements pipeline, to be implemented effectively. Even the challenges that Julie is talking about in Rustenburg will be attended to if you link the two together. The last bullet is about government should conduct a review of the efficacy of the current housing finance arrangement in meeting housing needs within the context of creating sustainable and more compact human settlements. There are three recommendations in that bullet. The last part of it is about densification. The simple thing to us is to stop building houses everywhere all over the show or in the periphery of town, because
the people that we're giving these houses to, they have to spend almost 70% of their income traveling to town. They have to spend the hard-earned budget looking for the next job. So they're saying we need to create more, what is called globally, more compact cities. In other words, we need to build houses next to amenities, next to transport interchanges, next to train stations and all of those areas. Which means then that it's going to be more expensive to deliver human settlements going forward, because all of that land, which is well located, well placed, is not going to come cheap. You've seen a number of projects that we're building in well located areas. The land doesn't come cheap. But it makes it cheaper going forward because you're dealing with spatial inefficiencies. When you build houses far away, especially in big cities, away from everything else, you're creating what we call spatial inefficiencies. And that's basically what FFC is saying. The policy component of the department, Louis and the team, Nontlanhla and Mapisa, they were given a task to come up with the new framework on densification. We know that we still haven't delivered that, but the target is to make sure that it's delivered before the end of this term of government. The other part that they are asking us to do is to look at the subsidy component of it. I know that there is an ongoing debate about this one, but our view is simple, and that is the only reason why we still continue to deliver free housing, and that constitutes a bigger part of our grants. It is because we are mandated first and foremost by the Constitution that we need to deliver these houses to people who earn less than 3,500. And our view is that once the economy starts performing, once our economy starts performing and most people are employed, it means that the majority of people are going to come out of the 3,500 threshold and they will be able to take care of themselves. Then it would mean that all of these other instruments, FLISP, MDI, all of those instruments will have to be accelerated as well. But for now, the economy is not doing well, which is why the majority of people are in the bracket, in the threshold of 3,500 and below. So we can't abandon the free housing program until the economy starts performing very well. A lot of countries also went through this cycle, and I'm quite convinced that the economy will perform, and once it starts performing, the majority of people will be employed, and once the majority of people are employed, then they will be able to do things for themselves. That is the third bullet, and we didn't understand it in the beginning, but we sat down with FFC and they explained it to us what it means, and I think we're on the same path. There is no real disagreement with us, with them, on that last bullet. We agree that we need to densify. We can't build houses everywhere. We agree that once the economy starts performing, we need to start accelerating the implementation or maybe upgrading or upskilling, the FLISP and the MDI part of it. And my colleague Lucy Masilo will talk about what we're doing in terms of the MDI. And I'll hand over to Lucy to deal with the MDI insurance process. Where we are, how is this process? You have asked a question last time, and we don't think that it was explained properly. And the question was, how is this going to work in practical terms? And Lucy is going to explain that. Lucy?
Before I go into how this will work, I think it will be proper first to give a background of the progress to date on the MDI. Initially, the human settlement through NHSC, they've conducted a business case on the MDI, and it was presented to National Treasury. And National Treasury, they wanted to satisfy themselves. They appointed PwC to do their own assessment on the business case and on the model and the financing And the PwC, they did endorse the MDI. And after that, the several meetings were held with the different stakeholders to agree on the model and how it's going to work. And it was agreed between the Financial Services Board, the Reserve Bank, the National Credit Regulator, and BASA. And they all agreed on the model itself. And there was a company that was formed called the Mortgage Default Insurance Company. That company is the one that will be running through with this MDI process. And from there, the banks and the MDIC, they will sign a contractual agreement. then the steps will be as follows. The borrower will apply for a home loan at any bank. Once the home loan has been approved, it will automatically fall within the affordable housing market, and it will be covered by that insurance company. Then the bank, on a daily basis, will forward the file to NDIC with all the pending registrations. Then when the home loan is registered, the bank will send a file with the payment, as well as the application information with the whole data of the applicant. And on a monthly basis, the bank will send an electronic file summarizing the payment profile, and the premium itself will be embedded within the home loan. And on a monthly basis, the file will give an indication on the collection protocol. Will also give an information on the audit process, on what has been checked and it will have been verified. So the information that will be forwarded by the bank to MDIC will have been audited and verified on the correctness thereof. Then the borrower will pay for their home loan to be sold. If they cannot pay the way their home loan to be sold, then that house will be sold through auction or other means. And then the MDI is notified by the bank on the intention of the sale and the expected selling price. Then once the house is sold and maybe there is a shortfall, that's when the bank will be able to claim from the MDIC. But then before a claim has been processed, the MDIC, the company, will verify the correctness of the selling price and the amount and the shortfall that needed to be covered thereof. This model and the whole process has been agreed by the Reserve Bank, the National Treasury, the Banking Association of South Africa, and the National Credit Regulator. And all of them have endorsed it as this is the correct process to be followed on the MDIC and the MDI itself.
This one I will hand it over to the CFO.
Thank you very much, DDG. Chairperson, without confusing the process, there are two slides that are talking to the USDG. And if I can be allowed, because they talk to more or less to the same item, that I deal with them within the framework of this slide and then don't come back to the USDG, if the chair allows. So I must say that I think we welcomed the recommendation of the portfolio committee to this effect, and I must indicate that this was prompted by a number of reasons. Because at first, and if one could just as well cite the major reason, was that Metros took advantage of the USDG and used it for their own interest and their own infrastructure without actually engaging with the policy framework of the USDG. And to an extent that they ended up using the USDG for the items that are related to sports and recreation, and at some point, and I think some of the metros use it for refurbishment of the office of the mayors, and this was found within the reports that we had received from the metro. But some of them could not even explain how that had to happen, and the rationale, if not the hide it behind the fact that it was a shift from a MIG, which is the MIG, which they could use it anyhow. But to a point that we ended up coming up with a turnaround strategy, which we did present to the portfolio committee at some point, whereby we were trying to emphasize the importance of the USDG, why it was first established, and the rationale of it. Because if we all recall that the information or the creation of the USDG was necessitated by the fact that we had challenges as far as the bulk infrastructure was concerned, and whereby we could not move with the utilization of the HSDG then, because bulk was not on the ground and we could not actually spend the HSDG. Hence, we had to come up with the USDG. But be that as it may, with that issue, we came up with a grant framework which had to direct on how the USDG could be done. But despite the chairperson as I indicated, that was actually utilized in a different format. Now, in the very same turnaround strategy, Chair, you would recall that we did indicate on how and where, if not what, the USDG could and could not buy. But despite that, we still realized that there were items that they went ahead and utilized. So, Chairperson, if we read the report that was presented by the Portfolio Committee on the very same note,
the recommendations that were there also suggest to us to say that how do we move with USDG going forward? And we still agree to say that we have the USDG Schedule 4, which is a supplementary grant to the metros, and that's form part of their capital budget. So it means that when they report, they have to report on their capital. It means that if the USDG is minimal, they could top up from the capital budget and not argue to say the USDG is not enough. So they could just as well use their capital budget to fund the bulk infrastructure and the pages of land within the same framework that we have developed. And to that effect, we realize that while they had to hide also behind DORA, the Division of Revenue Act, that they could use it, we also emphasize within the framework to say the conditions that are laid in the Division of Revenue Act are such that you cannot utilize the condition, the grant, for any other purpose except the one that is intended for. And that has actually since been sorted out with the metros. Hence, mostly in these two financial years, much money was actually used for infrastructure that is meant for human settlement development within the framework of those metros. And then from the monitoring part of it, Chairperson, I think we did develop a matrix, performance matrix, so that will enable us to monitor the performance within those metros, such that one would actually say from the build environment plan, the performance is attached to the analysis of the BEP as well. And I think we have won the battle, Chairperson, because the current scenario of the USDG is impressing such that we are comfortable with the reports that they are providing to us in line with the policy framework. But I must say, Chairperson, that one of the main emphasis was also that it's only not only the metros that are experiencing bulk challenges, even the secondary cities. Hence, we agreed at some point within the same framework of the portfolio committee that we would negotiate with National Treasury to extend the USDG to the secondary metros. And particularly, we had challenges in the Rado Park where we could not even use the HSDG to fund the infrastructure. And hence, the Rado Park could not move to some degree. But I think within the framework of the MIG at that point in time, we have the Rado Park moving. But that was not the end, because our challenge was not that while we have number of provinces that are metro-related, we also had four provinces, if not five, that did not have USDG, but they were experiencing the same challenges. Hence, the issue of the secondary cities to be actually extended with the USDG. So the discussions is ongoing with the National Treasury, and I think the last of its kind was when we agreed with them to say, in the very same context of the medium-term expenditure framework process, the budget is minimal for us to can extend the USDG to those kind of metros. We should be looking forward to the next MTF, which is 2015-16. And I think within that framework, we developed chapters, and I think that the first bullet one could just as well say that we realize that this is not going to work for us. But because of the fact that we had also the issue of sanitation, and this was one of the issue of the recommendation as well, to say we need to look at the basic services as well as the issue of infrastructure. So when we had the issue of the sanitation coming over, and as fixed as it is currently, we had to strategize and use the strategy of top slicing and rather earmarking the HSDG and USDG for the purpose of the bulk, relative to the issue of the bulk, the budget eradication. And I think, Chairperson, that one also, the DDG has actually spoken at length when he was presenting it at some point and explaining to the committee. So we actually took advantage of the fact that we could top-slice the Human Settlement Development Grant, and there's a budget of 980 over 2 years, or rather 1.9 in 2 years, whereby the 980 will be utilized in this financial year, and it will be actually divided to all the provinces in line with the budget eradication program that has been developed and signed by the three ministers. As well as the issue of the USDG, we know that the USDG is funding bulk infrastructure, so we also earmarked a certain portion of the USDG forcing metros to put it aside, particularly for the purpose of the budget eradication. So one step of the money to be used for bulk infrastructure in areas wherever it was never focused, it has been taken care of. And I think in most of the instances, the HSDG also will actually within the framework of the business plan and the outputs, as indicated, it will be used for HSDG or through the HSDG within those programs. Chairperson, as I indicated again that while we were on this matter, we received allocation from the US HSDG as well to fund the mining towns, and my colleague Julie has actually spoken to the progress to that effect, and the 1 billion that is being funded is actually starting from this year coming and the outer year of the 15-16. So there is progress in as far as the money that is actually moved to secondary cities, and I think there's also an element that Rustenburg on its own will also be accredited in future, if not assigned, and that currently it's actually sitting at level 2 accreditation. I did speak about engaging the National Treasury, and I must indicate that as a matter of fact, the point is from the next MTF, we would be looking as a policy option to fund this or to put this in our submission to National Treasury. So those discussions will erupt immediately after the year end as we begin the process of the MTSF. And I think the major part of the whole exercise is for us to come up with a business case, which we have also agreed with National Treasury on how to coin the business case for us to present the case to National Treasury and for National Treasury to be able to defend the Department of Human Settlements to that effect. Chairperson, thank you very much.
The next item is about the role of the Housing Development Agents in supporting provinces and municipalities in terms of land acquisition or land adjudication. I think the biggest comment here, which is a fair comment, is that SDA is doing land identification, they're doing land acquisition, but they're not doing land audit. And I think it is a fair comment, because what you want to do if you are planning in a municipality such as Mfuleni or any other municipality, it can be Rustenburg municipality, you want to know who owns which parcel of land. And that exercise was done by the Department of Land Affairs, the old then Department of Land Affairs. We felt that instead of duplicating each other's effort, maybe what SDA should do is to go and assess all of those land audits that were done. Some provinces have done land audits. I know that Gauteng has done the then Gauteng Department of Local Government and Housing. They did some land audit in Gauteng. But we accept that that work still has to be done. But this is not to say that SDA has not identified significant pieces of land that could be earmarked for human settlements. And this is what we want to talk about in the next slide. Go back. Yeah. If you look at this slide, this is what we've been presenting to you in terms of outcome EAT, where we are. Remember, we had a target that we set for ourselves, and we have exceeded that target. This target was 6,250 hectares of land. Now, when you break it down by province, you get a sense of what has been identified per province. For instance, in Eastern Cape, you have 29,000 hectares of land that has been identified. In the Free States, 22,000. Gauteng, 39,000 if you round it up. And KZN, 39,000. Limpopo, 9,000. I hope that's not land under the jurisdiction of Amakhosi, but we'll discuss that. And then in Mpumalanga, you have about 14,000 hectares of land. Northwest, 39,000. Northern Cape, 47,000. Western Cape, about 5,000, 6,000, if you round it up. And then the land requested and assessed, this is the parcels of land that SDA has already assessed. And they start with the Western Cape, the 571. The bulk of that is the Danel piece of land. That is the piece of land sandwiched between Mrs. Green and Kailicha. That vacant piece of land. It's not vacant. It used to be used as an ammunition testing field by Danel in the past.
which is why it has to be rehabilitated now. They've done feasibilities there in the Northern Cape. There are quite a number of land parcels that have been assessed by HDE. We can give you a list of all of those parcels of land. The only danger is that we don't want to make all of these land parcels public, because sometimes they can easily get invaded. So that's our concern. We know all of them, which of these land parcels that have been assessed. We know where they are. But we don't want this to end up in the wrong hands, because if they end up in the wrong hands, they will get invaded. There are a lot of invasions that are taking place in the country right now. In terms of release, this is the part that talks to our 5-year target. That is the fourth column, land released or donated. We're talking about 271 in Eastern Cape. We have about 1,173 in the Free State. We have 752 in Gauteng. We have 11 in KZN, 208 in Limpopo. And that gives us a total of 7,827. And that is the figure that we've been talking about in terms of our outcome 8 target. The last one is the land acquired, land purchased. And you can break it down as 5,000 by province, but it gives us a total of about 1,524. So this is the work that HDA has done over the last 5 years. The next slide, this is in our 2013-2014 business plan. Now you can see that some provinces didn't know where to buy the land parcels in the business plan. They just put the budget. You look at the first province, you have 87 million there. And then the Free State, they have looked at the land parcels that they want to acquire. That's why you have 796, and they've put an amount of about 86 million aside. I'm sure my colleague William can say something about the performance reviews yesterday. He was chairing all the performance reviews yesterday just to check whether we spend that money on those land parcels. But if we don't have that information, we can always forward it to you. In KZN, 3,146 million rand. So they're clear about which land parcels they want to purchase in this current financial year and how much money it's going to cost them. You put the budget aside even if you haven't finalized your evaluations. The rule is that once you have identified a piece of land, at least you need to get 3 values so that you can take an average value. Number valuation is not a complete science, so it's important that you get the expertise or the specialist to give you what is the actual value of the land, because there's a lot of speculation in this piece. And once people get to know that government is coming to buy land, they start inflating the figures. So it's important for us to make sure that we pay for the right piece of land, for the right value. So we've put an amount of about 409 million rand for land purchases in this current financial year. We hope that that budget will perform. Next slide. And this part was raised by, I think by yourselves, and it was also raised by a number of players in the industry, the Treasury and SSC, about the capacity, the professional capacity of the department, that is the appointment of engineers and town planners. What we've done in the past, you will recall that we used to go to Chuba and come back with a number of Chubian professionals, Chubian engineers, and most of those Chubian engineers will be deployed to various provinces. For instance, in this province, the majority of the Chubian professionals are assisting communities in the PHP program, the administration and the management of the people housing forces program, because that is where you work with people, you work with communities, and most Chubian engineers are trained properly to deal with communities. In some instances, our professionals, our own engineers, they don't do a good job in terms of interacting and managing issues with the communities at a local level. So then we recruited them, and
we simple thing that we have to do, because they do an amazing job in terms of the technical work. The only thing that we have to do is to train them to understand at least the English, which is the language of communication. And the majority of our communities, they do understand English. Some of our engineers don't even speak it. They learn better to speak local languages than even our own engineers. That's one thing that we've picked up with them. Then we will have them this year. The only difference this year, and I think this is the most important part to mention, is that some of them won't be deployed to the department. They will be working with us to assist in the management of the baggage eradication program or the sanitation program as a whole. We also want them to assist us in the management of the NASC program, the National Grading of Informal Settlements program. So in the past, we used to deploy them to provinces. So we still have those students who will be deployed to provinces, but some of them will be assisting the National Department of Human Settlements to manage the programs. Remember, in the past, we were only dispersing. We were more transactional in our approach. Now you've asked us to be a little bit more hands-on in dealing with some of these projects. So we need, can you go back again to the same slide? Yeah. We need a number of professionals. We deal with sanitation. Before we implement any sanitation program, we need hydrologists, we need engineers, so we'll have them. The minister visited Cuba in November last year to sign the agreement, the partnership agreement with UNECA, is the body in Cuba that deals with the recruitment of the Cubans. We will be going there to recruit them. Monica, one of our directors, is managing that process for us. So we'll be going there to recruit those Cubans. We signed the agreement already. The Cuban engineers will be used in various sanitation projects that include baggage eradication, management of waste treatment plants, in consultation with water affairs. But over and above this, we will be concluding what we call the professional resource teams. That is a pool of professionals in the built environment. In housing alone, in human settlements, we have more than 16 specialists that we interact with in the built environment. Before you deliver a house, we can give you a list of all of those specialists. And that is why we're talking about professional resource teams. And this is intended to make sure that we manage the delivery of most of the housing programs in various areas. Instead of putting more pressure on provinces and municipalities all the time, where they're struggling, we'll be able to partner with them and get things done. Because the Constitution was always about cooperation. It wasn't so much about who does what. It was about getting the three spheres of government to work together to deliver the product. Then the next slide, I'm going to ask the former CEO of Tubeli Chai himself, Connie, to talk to it. I always tease him and say he was the acting CEO of Tubeli Chai. That's my colleague, Fernando Sass.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Nia Protection. Chair, thank you very much. Chair, I think both institutions, I think the challenge that we had as a department then was that they operated without the accounting officer. And if one looks at the Tunisia specifically before we even get to the CEFCON, at the time of the minister appointing the interim CEO, there was nobody except the lower level staff who were actually working it for with the systems. And then the appointment of the interim CEO kicked off during that period. Similarly with the issue of the CEFCON chairperson, it was also the issue of the board that was also disbanded because of the people having resigned. And the fact that there was a CEO who also took a package but had to run the process in his capacity as then a standing CEO at that time. And a decision was taken by the then minister to appoint as well an interim CEO to run the closure process. And I must say, Chairperson, in terms of the recommendation of the committee, which we noted at the time of the recommendation, already the appointment of the accounting officer for the
the two institutions had already kicked off by the then Minister of Human Settlements. Chair, I think the issue of subcon at the same time was also affected by the fact that the budget that we had during that time had to lapse because we could not spend it during the 2010 and 11 financial year. And during 11 and 12, we did not have any budget. And as I indicated, that there was no accounting officer to can run. So there was no conducive system and processes where we could even say that the money is actually in the safe hands if we were to say that closure of the con should actually begin. But I must indicate, Chairperson, with that background that I've just given, we have actually been dealing with our HDA. Engaging HDA in the process was a simple process because of the mandate that they have and the understanding of how to sell properties and how to acquire properties within the framework of their mandate. It actually helped the closure of the Selcon a big deal because of the fact that, and as we are sitting with it, HDA at the same time, together with myself and the acting CFO, who was also the CFO that time, made the whole process very reasonable. But also the fact that there was an issue of the tax that we would not even close Selcon if we were owning SARS. And the debt was so enormous that even the department could not fund the debt. So we came up with strategies because there were some couple of land parcels and stands that needed to be sold for them to could actually provide us with the revenue that would enable us to settle the debt of SARS. Now, to date, we have actually sold 5 properties to HDA with the agreement that we had with HDA to the value of 27.6 million. Now, within the framework, we had to even pay the staff. We had to even, or most of started with the settling of the tax liability that was outstanding for so long. And then it was reduced from 13.4 million and to a point that we are left with a 1.7 million by the date of September last year. And Chairperson, those properties of land have already been transferred and the appointment of the conveyances was taken up by the Department of the HDA rather, including ourselves, whereby our signatories were related to the legal possibilities and we included our legal offices as well to that effect. Next slide. I must indicate that within the framework of those stands and properties that were sold, there are two that remained as at the date of 1st September, and the process is too slow to this effect. But we are anticipating that the transfer of these properties will be finalized by the 31st of March. Now, what we intend to do with the funding to that effect is that we finalize that 1.7 tax liability to SARS without us actually incurring the interest to that effect. And the rest of the money will actually assist Selcon to close itself. But what we are saying with that, then, that this is just an accounting transaction, Chairperson, that that money would be actually utilized and be used with the assistance of National Treasury, because as soon as the money gets available, it will have to be actually transferred to the revenue fund. But then we agree with National Treasury that we will set money aside in our budget to finalize the process itself, but it will be set aside, if not set off, by the fact that we shall have received additional funding from the properties that have been transferred. We are also indicating, Chairperson, that with these two that are remaining, and as soon as the tax liability is settled, then the conclusion of the transfer will kick off. But at the same time, I think, Chairperson, with the issue of the Selcon, it's not so difficult. It would make us, or give us an ability rather, to make an application to the Master of the Supreme Court or the High Court rather, and to appoint a liquidator who will actually wind up the process. And that process can only begin as soon as we finalize the transfer of those two properties. And as soon as the liquidator is in process, and I think at the same time we will actually put an advert on the closure, but there are so much expectation, notwithstanding the fact that we still have with Tubelisha, that as soon as the advert goes up on the liquidator and the winding up is advertised, we would be expecting some of the challenges in as far as the companies that probably would have sort of an engagement with Selcon before
on the properties that are there, and that will be dealt with by the liquidator as he or she would be winding up. So as far as Tubelisha is concerned, I think what we did as Mbondo, we did a sort of an enormous work during that process. We were working closely with a service provider by the name of Learning Strategies, and with all that was done, Chairperson, and I think also the issue that was actually mentioned by the Chair and the Mandela Bay with the province, is also one of the issues that we thought we had dealt with Tubelisha, but if they are actually coming up, we cannot run away from them. But I must indicate that, Chair, there's also another city next week whereby the Tubelisha is expected to appear before the committee, and we will be presenting a full closure report to the committee next week. But notwithstanding that, I must indicate that we have appointed a liquidator by the name of Admiral Trust, who has to date done also enormous work, because some of the properties, some of the stands rather, particularly for Tubelisha, have been concluded to have been transferred. But there were so many challenges in as far as the issues of those stands is concerned, the issues of the, can go to the next slide, you see, the issues of beneficiaries whom we could not trace, the issue of the authorities and municipalities who could not provide us with the clearance certificate to some of those things, and the fact that we also had challenges with the rates and taxes, and we had to pay. The good part of Tubelisha, it had its own funding, so we could not actually request funding from any other source. So we were utilizing the funds as they were actually in carrying sort of the profits from the funds that were available with Tubelisha, and it had its own bank account. So we did not require any funding from the department. But that be that as it may, we had to settle all the debt, including the debt of Eastern Cape Chairperson, whereby as we present the report next week, we would indicate clearly on how we had to reach consensus to that. And let's remember the last amount that when we sent it to KZN, as well as the Eastern Cape, was that in the event contractors come to realize that Tubelisha is being winded up, we would be expecting the contractors to come forward and indicate that they were not paid, and similarly with the issue of the subcontracts that we were speaking of, and that the province, having received an 80 million at that time, would actually take care of those issues. But we cannot run away from the fact that perhaps the province may have used the money for other reasons other than the purpose of those contractors that were contracted with Tubelisha and who were not available at the time of us closing the books of Tubelisha. So I must also say that the closure of Tubelisha is dependent on the finalization of number of stands, and I think many of them are still in Dwarrenfontein. You can get to the next slide, Lucy. Yeah. Before that one. Okay. Let me just indicate now that the closure of Tubelisha is dependent on 174 stands in Dwarrenkop, as well as 70 stands in Khayelitsha, which is in Western Cape. And as soon as those are transferred, it's in my head, my apologies, Chairperson. My apologies, Chairperson, but it's just ringing because I know that we have challenges as far as the Khayelitsha stands are concerned. But it's almost 174 stands in Dwarrenkop, and that is in Gauteng, and 70 stands to be Khayelitsha in Western Cape. Chair, and with your permission, I think let me also indicate to the House that while we did not put a slide, it was also a recommendation that we also close the housing fund, and we did not put it as a slide. But if I'm allowed, I can just give a committee one line to that effect. That was one of the recommendations, and I think we missed the slide to that one. May I? Okay. Chair, I think the issue of the housing fund is also a challenge in the sense that if we go back to 1995 to a certain period, which is 2004 at some point, if not five, the housing fund had to come to a closure because of the introduction of the Division of Revenue Act. And the
notion then was for us to disestablish the housing fund. And it could not just be disestablished, it had to go through all the channels. And the last channel that it went through was the MIMMEC then, who then took a decision for all the provinces to disestablish the housing fund. And that decision was actually carried upon by all provinces, who then had to transfer the money from the housing fund to their account. Now, as to how that money was utilized, it's something that provinces are still actually battling to give us as to whether that money was used for the purpose of housing. And I want to believe that it was actually used for the purpose of housing because it was transferred back into their account. But Chair, for us to move on with the closure of the housing fund, and I think it's one of the recommendations that was set by the committee that we need to amend the Housing Act, because the Housing Act needs to be amended before we could actually take up the issue of the closure of the housing fund. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. This is the last slide on monitoring and evaluation. We take the challenge that the department needs to check up its monitoring capacity. I think you said this several times in a number of meetings that we need to beef up the monitoring capacity of the department. But what we also need to state here is that that capacity to monitor the work of the 8 municipalities that are doing human settlements and the 9 provinces that are implementing the human settlements program. That exercise is not going to come cheap. We're going to have to beef up our own expertise within the department. The starting point is to fill all the vacancies, and most of these vacancies are within the program and project management unit. We will fill them. We're very optimistic that most of those posts under MNA will be filled. The additional capacity, this is the establishment of a pool of professionals in the built environment. I think we've already talked about this, what we call the PRT. We're concluding that process next week. I think we'll have the bid evaluation process meeting next week, Monday. And this is only to create the panel at this stage, so that as and when there is a requirement to use them in any of our provinces or any of our 8 metros, we can utilize them. So we've concluded that part. But the biggest beneficiary of this whole exercise is the monitoring and evaluation unit, which is headed by Philip Charkin. And that concludes our presentation today, and colleagues will be more than willing to take comments, questions, and recommendations.
Thank you very much, Mbu and your team. Members, let's just take a comfort break for 5 minutes. So, let's come back at 25:02. Thank you. The members, that work has been done. But I think from my introduction, where I was saying that we believe that a lot of work should have been done because we have given them ample time to consider the recommendations and the key findings of the portfolio committee. So I think he was trying to make sure that he is qualifying that statement. So I would request members to comment and raise questions of clarity and necessary.
But let's try and make it short because we still have two presentations. And I understand that there are members who are going to leave by 5 to 1. So it means we have got a time constraint to make sure that within this 45 minutes that is left, we make sure that we finish everything. Amandole, Honorable Steve Machoba, Mamtabu, Tole, Pome.
Can I start?
Yes.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. And I would also like to say thank you to the department for a presentation that was, to me, in my opinion, well thought out and well presented. I must say for me, Chairperson, it's been a good story to listen to. But even though it is a good story, I still have a question, but these are for clarity. Now, firstly, on the disaster fund, you have 343 million rand to spend, and you have spent 76 million rand, leaving you with more than 200 million rand, and this is towards the end of the financial year. So I was wondering whether you think that there will still be use for that money. Are there still some disasters that you need to look into in terms of the country as a whole? Or is it the kind of money that can be easily rolled out for the next year or so? I just wanted to find out, you know, about the outstanding, the balance. For me, the balance is too big to for the short time that we have before the end of the final year. Now, secondly, Chairperson, on the slide that talks about the engineers and so on and the recruitment of Cubans, we have no problem with our country strengthening its relations with other countries and recruiting people to come and assist us. But I was just wondering whether, as you speak to the Cubans, for instance, to come and assist us, is it only about them coming to assist us, or do you have a program, for instance, by which we can send our own people to that country in the fields that you need to be trained, so that we don't depend on the Cubans forever, but as time goes, we're also producing our own engineers, producing our own experts, so that in future we become independent. And can you link this to the vacancy rate slide, where you say you have had to re-advertise some posts because you could not find suitable people, because earlier, or suitable candidates, because earlier on, as this came up, I asked myself the question that I usually ask here. Are the higher institutions of learning producing the people that we need? And in your case, are you satisfied that, for instance, the higher institutions of learning in this country are actually providing the kind of manpower that you need? If not, what are you doing about it? Now, and lastly, Chairperson, on the question of the land availability, I see you've got those columns there. I'm not quite sure if I get the difference very well between land released and land acquired. I'm looking in particular at the Eastern Cape, where you have quite a good amount of land that has been released or donated, but very little that has been acquired. So if the land has been released, does it mean that land is now ready for the department to utilize? Or are you still going to wait for something else before you can utilize that land? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Chair. For the sake of time, one will be very quick. Just to re-emphasize the point that Manjo was making in terms of the appointment of engineers and town planners, I think we need to have skills transfer. That must happen. We should not just say those Cubans come here and, you know, the arrangement is for them just to do their own thing here. We should have skills transfer in line of what you have said, that you, it's a built environment. It needs expertise and certain specific qualifications. So we should be using that opportunity to rope in those students to give us those necessary skills. Apart from them learning it, because we need to make sure that, you know, they you know, they, and so on as well, depending on where they work. So we need to make sure that we cut those skills transfer. It's very important. And the thing of the vacancy rate, I think it's very much quite concerning. Because of my view and my belief is that it to me it seems as if it's an urban legend to say that within the whole skill base in South Africa we are saying we don't find suitable. I understand the logic of saying it's an expertise driven type of environment, but I think with the whole youth unemployment that we have, we cannot say that we don't find anyone suitable unless we have to define suitability. If we define suitability in terms of academic credentials, it's another story. But there is suitability in different meanings and interpretation. It might be political, it might be otherwise. So I think we need to move fast in as far as that is concerned. And I think on the FFC, let me commend you on meeting with the FFC and looking at their recommendations one by one. And I think the essence that the FFC is saying in terms of alternative funding model is not to say that the department should abdicate their responsibility in as far as the constitution is concerned of access to housing opportunities, but is to say how best do we move forward within those constitutional parameters and the resource inability and the resource, you know, deficiency that we are having, and craft something viable. And you summed it up well when you say when the economy grows up and people get skills and people work and then people will have employment and then the problem goes away. But up until then, we've got to find innovative means and ways of sustaining this, because we all agree that it's unsustainable, the current funding model. And I think that's what the FFC is driving home. And as far as all the other things, I think you've engaged very extensively with them. On the Auditor General, one would have loved to see the specifics rather than the process. I appreciate the fact that you are telling us the process that you are engaging upon for remedial action, but there were specific issues that the AG has raised that we should have, we've wanted you to dwell on, because in our BRRR report, we've made very specific recommendations in as far as what the AG has said. So what you've given us is an umbrella body of the process that you are following to address those specifics. And well done, CFO, to the USDG, making sure that it goes to secondary towns. And I hope that when it goes to secondary towns, you make sure that you give them the template. Remember where we started when the metros didn't have the template and they were spending AY. Please make sure that you make it watertight, that these people know what to spend that money on, and then ensure that there is monitoring in ensuring that they spend those funds accordingly. And I think with the mining towns, I think the issue here is not about the resources. There is financial commitment and everything, but what I'm sensing is that political will to implement on the ground is not there. Because of why do we have these challenges of town planning, of services and everything, if we say these are the special projects? I mean, these are presidential proclaimed projects. They should not have these bureaucratic problems when they get to be implemented in the ground. So what is the problem? The fact that they are committed, but you get to be hobbled by town planning, by bulk infrastructure, by all those things that should not necessarily hawk a presidential or a special project. What is the problem there? And I think I've got a serious issue there, because the funding is there, but the commitment to drive the those processes forward is not there.
position. I'll be short. When we talk about bank infrastructure, I would like to talk to President Boom, your relationship with the department with what we Water Affairs. That's the one which is serious. I'll mention one. Mpumalanga, local municipal, there's a problem. It's been applied to Eastern Cape. East Lake, Amatole, local municipal, and Oba. And then also, just to hear from them. You mentioned when it comes to ADA, and then when you say land, the question of NSF. But you mentioned that the Dinel, which is outside and the town, it's between the Kailisha and Mr. Pape. This is far from town. And I want to check why is it always when we are getting the land, we are getting land far from where the people are working. And also, I will just add now on disaster plans. The disaster which happened in 1998, not now. Well, we've been mentioning this from 2009. Now it's the 2014. There's nothing which has been done. And then code one. And Eastern Cape, District Chris Anim, and then I'm specific now. And also to share about the monitoring the evolution, especially on sanitation. That part. I won't leave this board.
Because here expenditure nothing.
We haven't spent anything out of the 17.7. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. First of all, we have to appreciate the presentation. But my Chairperson is what I would look to get from the department about purchase of land by the provinces. If we check the Eastern Cape, there was no hectares and the budget was 87.391. But there was no hectares, but the expenditure is 69.3. How come? Because there was no hectares. And the other one that I want to add up, Chairperson, is that one of the engagement with the municipalities. Because the disaster that happened this year at Gauteng, especially in Mamelodi, and Kangala, and Soshanguve. There's nothing that's happening. What is happening? What is your engagement with the municipality? And the other one, Chairperson, is that one of the program. Do the department have a program that helps those accredited municipality for the beefing up of their capacity? Because most of them, they don't have capacity, you know. But what is the program of the department? And the last one, Chairperson, is that one of the cat dwellers. I have a concern about this, the cat dwellers, because if you always refer to Gauteng police, with Gauteng police, there is a disaster in that the cat dwellers in Gauteng. I'm from Gauteng, I know what I'm talking about. Do you actually engage with them and find out the problem that they are facing in those backyard? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. Yes, I want to thank all the presenters, and I think we've come a long way in presenting and giving us measurable, quantifiable things. And in particular, I want to point out that the mining towns presentation, giving all the, the detail there. Of course, we can come back and whack on that one, because when you don't meet your deadlines, then but that's what we need. That's what we need. Can I just pick up on a couple of things? Some of these things are going to be suggestions. You talk about the title deeds and the policies that you're changing in regard to that, and I think we really are moving in the right direction with this and setting up pipelines. We desperately, desperately need that. But I get a sense in which perhaps because of informal settlements it could hold us back a bit, and I would like to suggest that maybe is there not a way in which we can move forward with what we can move forward on and not hold everything back because of complications in one area. Then also, just to follow on with the backyard dwellers, I want to agree that this is a very complex thing. I don't think that this is easy, because I think when you come to the backyard dwellers, what criteria will you be using? People can then be renting for 3 months and then qualify for a house. So I think we need to be just a little bit careful on that. I've commented about the mining towns, but I do want to say there's a mixture of things here. There's some good stuff happening, but there are also delays already in deadlines that we've not met. And I'm not going to go through the detail of that because it's very clearly there, but we will be watching that. But I think well done on presenting that. On the rig, we talk about no problems there because all the business plans are presented. Does that, in your report you talk about 19 out of 23, did I miss that perhaps it's been filled in and that there are 23 plans now? And then I think on the FFC, on the assignment to the metros, I'm very satisfied with the fact that you are doing a thorough assessment here before you actually assign this to the Metros, and then you're delaying there. But I would say to you, am I hearing you say that it will be the end of the year now before they are assigned, or is it going to be less? Because I think we do need to speed up things. All the things are here, but there's an urgency, and we do need to speed up. MDR, just a question on that. Who ultimately is where the buck stops here? Which department is this in? Is this with NHFC, or you know, is it? I'm not quite understanding who ultimately is where the buck stops. I understand you forming the MDRC. Is that then a thing all on its own, or does it belong within an entity? I'd just like some clarity on that. Chairperson, I think I will leave it at that. There's plenty, but we've had a long session.
Thank you, Chairperson. I also want to say thank you to the presenters. With regard to the accreditation of municipalities, I think it would be good for the department to provide the committee with a report on the accreditation of municipalities, so that we can really see how many, because the figures that's been given in this, you know, it's either 20 or 23 or 15 or so, that we know what is the status in terms of accreditation of, let's say, all our B municipalities and C municipalities, and obviously the metros. And then, Chairperson, the title deed backlog remains to be a problem. And I don't know whether it really has to do with policy, although I do believe it has to do with policy direction. Out of the 3 million RDP houses that have been built, more than a million title deeds are outstanding. What is the department going to do about that? And I hope that these things will be accelerated, because you must remember that the title deed is really the most important when it comes to the delivery of housing, because it gives access to finance, it gives opportunities outside, so we have to accelerate the issuing of title deeds in the future, and that is really a plea. Then, one of the members did touch onto the backyard dwellers. I will remain to be very concerned about the backyard dwellers, because in terms of infrastructure, can the infrastructure carry, unless it's been expanded, can it be, as the assessment actually be made if we want to excel on the delivery of backyard dwellers? I'm not against it. I'm just saying that can current infrastructure carry that load? And then again, coming back to, why do we keep on making the same statement as to say that, you know, in terms of we must densify and all of that, that we can't look at adjacent or new cities in our country on available land? Can't we take the amenities to those developments? Why must we keep on concentrating and overloading certain facilities? So I think that is also something in the future that the department can look at, Jefferson, in terms of policy, expanding the thinking of how are we going to be able to provide housing to quite a vast amount of people in our country. We must remember that we're not only sitting with South Africans, migration, immigration, and all of that happens. So a lot of people are coming to our country. And thank you, Jefferson.
Problem, yes, yes. Nuba Bafutani in Yerlandu and Yotona West. It is great. Here we issue a land, straightforward, a recommendation.
was saying through MINMEC, members of the executive council responsible for human settlements in each of the provinces provide a report on how much of the budget was utilized for the purchasing of land for human settlements, including the size and quantity that was purchased. Now, we have got a report. This is in conflict. That is in conflict. There are gaps. So which means I am the Hile homework here. Another issue that was raised is the issue, kindly please tell us what is the rationale. What was the rationale of the department to appoint 48 economists rather than appointing the technical staff, engineers and town planners? You are complaining that you don't have these skills, but you are in-housing 48 economists. So you have not come up with a response to that. Then I think some of the issues you have addressed appropriately, but you were selective in terms of reporting the report of the Chapter 9 institutions. PSC, they came to us, and the report of PSC is here within this BRRR report. So there's nothing that is coming up. How have you addressed the issues that were raised by the PSC? The issue of the presidential proclamation on the mining council can never be emphasized. And yet, these issues that you are raising here as in Africa EE blockages are not acceptable. You are having a delivery agreement, you are having a troika arrangement. Everything is here. So why do we still have some challenges like bulk infrastructure and infrastructure problems? Whereas we do have regional bulk grants. So those are some of the issues that we believe that they could be pressured. Akakwazi upresident athi makuyele bekhona abanye abantu sibe sinama-challenges. There's problems of electricity. There's energy to come in. Because wonke umuntu have to focus on this project. Then coming to there, are the communities aware of these challenges? Niyabakona baya protest outside. Bathi azisizinto akho ntoni. The community mining town, are they aware? I have prayed for these challenges on a regular basis, which is the progress. So, since the farmer has an initial standard. Then, the last issue, I think it is also critical, which is the address. The issue of the soil spot, that project, it's a rectification program. But what is the problem? But I think most of the issues have been covered by the members. As you know, my better route to so that then the way forward, please.
Thank you, Chair. I'll try to be as brief as possible. Let me start with the question about the bulk challenges in the mining towns. The last visit by the members of the IMC on mining towns was in Rustenburg, and the meeting that we had with the Minister of Water Affairs was that the two challenges that they want to deal with, one is how to make the existing schemes in Rustenburg to talk to each other. Because you do have a number of schemes. I think you have about 13 schemes, if my memory serves me well, in Rustenburg, in the greater Bujanala district. How do you make sure that those schemes talk to each other? In fact, Minister Mulewa was looking at all of them, the location of all of those schemes. Before we even think about creating that 70 or 79 kilometer pipeline from Mahalis to Rustenburg, because there's also that project which is in the pipeline to move a 70 kilometer pipeline of water to Rustenburg. The biggest challenge
is water supply. I think we can deal with the other downstream activities like wastewater treatment network. But the biggest challenge was water in the region. All those projects like Bukamoso and others will benefit out of that exercise. So the Troika is dealing with that. I don't think we're raising it now as a problem, because I think in most cases there is a solution. If we can't get the schemes to talk to each other, then we get the water supply from Mahalis. And that was discussed with all the ministers, including Minister Shaban from the Ministry of Monitoring and Evaluation. So I thought let's start with that. Troika is meant to deal with not only with bucket eradication, but with all the challenges of wastewater treatment network and water supply. So I take that as a recommendation. In terms of land acquisition, maybe we need to admit here that we missed the recommendation, because I think what you wanted to do is to look at how much has been spent over the last 5 years on land acquisition. You're talking about 7,000 hectares of land that have been released, and I want to link it to the question that was raised, the difference between acquisition and release. Remember, we took a conscious decision that we will start with the land that we own as government, whether it's owned by public works or it's owned by state-owned enterprises. We're going to start there and release that land. And we're using the word release because we don't have to buy it and acquire from a private owner. So that's where we started. That's the land that is owned by various government departments. And some of it, and the bulk of it, we didn't have to pay for it. Where you end up paying is when you acquire it from the private sector. And I think what you want is a detailed exercise. How much have you spent on the 1,534 hectares that you have acquired? And I must be honest that we didn't do that exercise coming here. The next slide, there was a question, while still we are on the land acquisition. If we can go to the next slide. This one is only looking at 1 year. It's looking at 2013-2014. You can see the budget. But the fact that you still have a gap on the hectares, it is a question of poor planning. I would say this by provinces. And one of the things that we are grappling with in human settlements is how we plan properly for the upstream planning activities. We're still grappling with this, and that's why we bring in the pool of professionals down and regional planners to assist provinces, because they're struggling. Most planning departments in most provinces are very small. The two provinces, in fact, three provinces are doing a good job in terms of investing in planning right now. It is Gauteng, it is KZN, and it is Western Cape. Even though I've seen this data, they've done an amazing job with HDA. They brought in HDA to assist them with the Austin planning activities. The Eastern Cape, as well, I think they've got a good pipeline for the next year, which shows that this is a good planning arrangement. The challenge is when you haven't made a decision as to which land parcels you are going to buy, you put an allocation aside, but you haven't made up your mind as to which land parcels you want to target. So that is why you still see the gaps, and we don't know exactly which of the land.
There is an expenditure. There is an expenditure already, but there's a gap in terms of the land parcels that has been purchased, I mean the hectares. That's what I'm referring to.
What I'm saying
we
is
have
that
spent already. What have you spent that money on? Yes.
We will go back. I'm taking the challenge that we haven't done a good job in terms of assessing the land acquired, what did we spend the money on, and why do we still have all of those gaps. But again, the fact that we haven't done a good analysis is also a function of our planning. And I want to put that forward, that we're still grappling with planning, and I'm not going to give up the bush about this one. We're still grappling big time with planning, and that's one area that we want to invest in. In human settlements, once the project is on the ground and everything, the contractors are on site, you simply monitor them. But it takes approximately between 3 to 5 years to get that project planned properly and packaged properly. So which is why we want to invest in those upstream planning activities. So the question about land acquisition, I don't think we have addressed it properly in our presentation. And we'll be more than willing to do further work
in unpacking this one. The backyard dwellers, the first question is about, can the infrastructure hold? Remember, every time you increase the services in the downstream areas, for instance, if you eradicate buggers, just making this an example, you're eradicating buggers and you want to replace that with waterborne sanitation, it means you need to increase your wastewater treatment network as well. Because everything you do on the downstream will have an impact on the capacity side of your network. So we will see that in some areas, Gauteng in this province, they have started the process of servicing backyards. They started with the services. But as you service it, because you may find that there are about 4, 5, 6 shacks in the backyard, and they're all using one toilet or two toilets. So when you do that, you need to take into account the impact of that upgrading on the existing network, because this is an old network. Some of the areas like Langa here, Soweto, and Tanzania, these are old areas. And that network, if you upgrade it, the backyard services, you need to take into account that this will have an impact on your wastewater treatment plant. I think most municipalities, especially the metros, they know how to plan this. They know how to balance this. Even that most of them are receiving USDG, so this should not necessarily be an issue. So where they are upgrading, you may find that they've already upgraded the sewer network, they've upgraded all the bulk related network. And you've seen it in most of the metros, the bulk infrastructure is no longer a major problem anymore. In the past, you can go back and look at all the reports that were coming to you. There was always an excuse about bulk infrastructure in most of the metros. But that now, if you read all of the reports, that is disappearing because the USDG is being used to deal with bulk infrastructure. So I don't see it as a problem if they are going to put more services in the backyard. There was a question about accreditation. I think we will come here. One of the reasons why the DG put the process on hold, not to fast track it, is because there were quite a number of significant steps that we needed to achieve first. Going back to cabinet, minister has to go back to cabinet and present a full report on accreditation. We have to come back here and present a full report, especially on the 6 metros, because remember we're now moving to the final leg of the 6 metros. So we have to come here and present it to you, our own plan. Our plan is to assign the 6 metros on the 1st of July, disperse, the CFO will disperse the capacity building grant component on the 1st of April so that they can manage all of the transitional issues. The capital part of it, the HSDG part of it, will only be dispersed to those metros on the 1st of July 2015. So we have enough time before we can disperse the capital component of human settlements. So I thought we need to explain that, but we will present a full report. We'll come back here and make a presentation. In fact, one of my colleagues, Nontantra, is not here with us today. He's working on that. It will be presented to EMT, which is the executive management team of the department. The question about the backyard looking, I've covered that. Others were just a recommendation. The vacancy rate and title deeds and planning, I think that question is a very relevant question. You notice that the bulk of the title deeds that we are dealing with, the bulk of it is all problem. It is, in some instances, even though we're solving it, most provinces will find that they've started an initiative to hand over those title deeds. The biggest challenge, even after you have done the retrofitting of the township establishment, you have done the subdivisions and everything, the biggest challenge has always been, who do you give the title deed to? Because some of the people who got those houses have moved on. They're no longer staying in those houses. So you have a massive number of title deeds that the minister, the MSCs and the minister, they want to issue in some cases. But the individual owners of those houses, because they received the houses from 1999 or in 2002, and they're no longer there. The other challenge is that we still, even though you find that there is a town, this town has got units and other individual stands, you find that this town, all of it, is owned by another department.
at the provincial public works department, because we went ahead with all of those processes without formalizing all of those township establishment and subdivision issues. But that's what we are dealing with. In fact, my colleague is Bengo is running a stakeholder, a provincial task team, which is dealing with the transfer of some of the assets that are owned by provinces. But some of the assets, you have developed towns in some of them. In some cases, you have vacant stands. So we're dealing with that problem. There is a task team that is working on that. But for the new going forward, which is your main concern, how do we prevent this going forward? There's only one way that you can prevent it, and that is to invest in your planning processes. Because if you don't get your planning processes lined up properly, you don't want to start construction until you've dealt with all the issues, your planning approvals, until you've dealt with all of your township establishment issues. In the past, because we were chasing targets and chasing timelines, so we would go ahead and start building, and then we come back and retrofit. And until you've done your subdivisions, you won't be able to get a title deed. You will have this one big mother title deed of a piece of land, but the subdivisions are still need to be made. So that's the challenge that we're faced with in the past. But currently, most metros, I think they've done an amazing job, and provinces, they're doing a good job in terms of packaging projects properly, doing first things first. That's what it means. A sore spot, Julie will respond to that. I'll leave it to her. There was a question about Freiberg municipality and the NHBRC. I know that this was an issue that was brought to our attention. I must be honest that I haven't made a follow-up. I know that my colleague in the department, I think it was Johan Wallis, who was working on it, one of our chief directors. I need to go back and check where we are with that process. It was brought to our attention in some of those houses. I won't be able to respond to it now. I must be honest about it. There was a question about the Danel piece of land. Why are we still building from afar? The good thing about that piece of land, even though it's far from the amenities, is that it still remains as a buffer between Mitchell's Plain, which is predominantly a colored township, and Kailicha, which is predominantly an African township. So if you go ahead and rehabilitate that piece of land and you build it, you are integrating two communities there. So that's just one important part about it. You recall that from Danel to Promenade Shopping Center is within a 15-minute, even 20-minute walk. It's not far away, the shopping mall. So it's a well-located land if you consider Mitchell's Plain and Kailicha as emerging metropolis or emerging new towns, if you like. So I would say that it is well-located. It is a piece of land, a good, well-located piece of land. The biggest challenge is whether we will get value for money, because only 40-45% up to 50% of it is developable. Some of the parts of this land is not developable. There are environmentally sensitive portions of that piece of land. So there is a cost-benefit analysis that HDA has done as to whether it makes sense for us to pay something like 170 million rand for this piece of land, because that's how much it's going to cost us if you include the rehabilitation. So we're doing a cost-benefit analysis, but it is well-located. My view is that it's well-located, and it's integrating two communities which were separated by the Group Areas Act. Then there's a question of the AG matters. I'll leave it to my colleague, Ben. I'm just taking those that belong to me, and I'll leave the rest to other colleagues. The transfer of skills. When we do the recruitment of students, I think there are two things. One is, in the health sector, we're sending a lot of young health practitioners to Cuba for training. We haven't done that in the built environment, and that's something that we may consider as a recommendation, that we need to send young graduates, young civil engineers, young town planners to Cuba for training. We can do that, and I think we do have the budget as well to do it. But as we're getting the Cubans, we're also training them. When they get to the department, we'll be pairing them with some of the young graduates program. In the past, the department has always struggled to give practical experience to the beneficiaries of our bursary schemes.
So this will make it easy for us to train those young graduates who are graduating from the sector with some of the children engineers. And I agree, we have to teach them Zana and Xhosa and English before they come here. We do that. We give them a 1 month or 2 months training program, and they're very eager to learn, and they learn very fast because the attitude is correct. It's easy to learn any language if the attitude is very correct. Then the vacancy rate, I'll leave that to the CFO, sorry, the COO. I think she's picked up the question. And the disaster funds, the performance of the disaster funds, whether we are going to spend the money, we left with 2 months. Umama Zoli has raised that question. I'll ask Lucy to respond to it. The question about the backyard program in Gauteng, Babu Zoli has raised that question, and we accept it. I think we said it upfront that the backyard policy program is not an easy program. It's not going to be a clinical exercise for us because some of the people who are staying in the backyard don't qualify for the subsidy. Some of them have received subsidies elsewhere. The landlords who own the stands, you may also find that they don't qualify. And if we give the subsidy to them, it becomes a double dipping exercise. So there are a lot of challenges that we have to deal with in implementing this program, which is why it has taken us forever to finalize the policy, because it's a very difficult policy program. Gauteng started it in 2008, 2009. They were running with it, and they experienced a lot of challenges. In fact, they applied BRICS, if my memory serves me well, in 2010, because they experienced a lot of challenges. Now, we don't want to repeat those mistakes, and that's why we're taking a lot of time to fine-tune the policy. We're working with SALGA in making sure that we deal with all of those policies. They've come up with a number of options as to how to deal with backyard accommodation. The services part of it is easy. It's very easy to deal with. If you're only providing services in the backyard, it's easy to deal with that. It shouldn't be a problem. The challenge is when you start building those structures. I'll leave it there. If there are other questions that we need to answer, my colleagues will pick those ones up. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. The issue about source food, Chairperson, yes, these are older projects and it's been there for a long time, but now that we're in the process of the presidential package, as you will see, we've been monitoring these projects a lot more, so people are able to give us a lot more in-depth information as and when we require. What we will do is that we will do reconciliations with the province and with the municipality just to ensure that what we are being given is correct, and we will follow that up, Chairperson. And there are old projects, and we know that they've even been neglected up to a point in time. But at this point in time, we're monitoring, we're keeping track, and we will continue, and we will ensure that the reconciliations are done. And we will, when we come back, we'll have a fuller report for you. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. I think for the department, we do acknowledge that the vacancy rate is still extremely high at 19%. We are doing the best that we can. In terms of the skills as to the non-suitability that has been requested, what exactly are we looking for? There are two main areas that we are looking at. Firstly, the qualifications, which is not a problem. So that issue of the output that we get from the Institute of Higher Learning is not an issue for us. But where we are grappling is in terms of the experience that we require for the prospective candidates. But what now we need to do going forward is also to accommodate, to look at the issue of the potential, because it's not always in all instances that you will get a Rosevoy. So, Chair, I think that is the way that we are addressing the issue of vacancies. Just briefly on the issue of the issues with DPW, I will say we are all on the same understanding. The issue of credit notes is an accounting matter. We will pay for 260 when we move in of office accommodation. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
On the issue of the disaster relief grant, yes, we had a meeting with the provinces yesterday to discuss thoroughly the understanding on the grant. Most provinces that we have met yesterday, they were complaining about the issue of the bulk, but we agreed with them that we need to request a rollover. And at least on this matter, we are working with the National Disaster Management Center, and they assist us requesting a rollover from National Treasury. For the past years, we were granted a rollover because it's a disaster that happened and we need to fix those damage structures. So we do monitor those provinces who are working at the slow pace, and we discuss with them, but the National Treasury do grant us the rollover on the unspent amount on the disaster relief. And on the question of the 1998 disaster, the National Disaster Management Center, they go and do the analysis. And on the 94.1 million, Alfred Nzo is there, Amajole, Chris Hani, Yotavi, and O.R. Tambo, that are included in that in the current year's budget. But it's the issue of the budget that has been addressed, and the issue of the province working speedily on that. But also they'll try and request a rollover if it's not covered. Yes, I think I've answered all the questions on that. On the issue of the MDI, this company is going to be registered with the Financial Services Board. It's going to be an independent company registered in terms of the Companies Act, and currently it's sitting with the NHSC. Thank you. Where does the bank stop?
Okay, Chairperson, while we agree that it's a 100% wholly owned company through the NHSC, the buck stops with the National Department of Human Settlements.
Okay. Actually, the accountable department between the local and the institutions that are accountable, it's out of order. Make sure that we clarify on the list. I want to see the absolutely. Thank you very much, Mo, with your team. So bona na kule vhekeza vale is weekend masingene the second item on the agenda, which is the issue of the contractors, building contractors. Abala umbu ubese wane representa abantu base Eastern Cape bayasala ningene nifuna enda umbu wakala imandithi umbu ungavunyala wami 7 times, but anayo la mandate bowuzinika yona because i-ruling ya last week was saying you must come here this week with the province and with a report, a compiled around here of which we believe that is that we have not yet read them. Then Nelson Mandela. So whatever you have thought of, which you need to meet in the right direction, but you should have just arranged that, but not bring it to the here. We should have allowed this process, and then we come up with a recommendation to say go back, because Nelson Mandela can't see Nelson Mandela here. And I must, honorable members, confirm to you that I've written a letter to the mayor. Raising serious concern that they have not come before the portfolio committee, and I even indicated to that correspondence that we were not intending to summon them today, but if they have not come today, we'll have no other alternative rather than to summon them in terms of the constitution. That's the bottom line. Projects were implemented. Funds were spent. Government funds were spent. So all three spheres of government should come before this portfolio committee and account. Irrespective of what they have done, definitely there has to be a role that should be played by all three spheres of government in a project. It does not matter whatever role you decide to assign to yourself. You must have a role. It does not necessarily mean that you have to open your mind on Sunday to play a role. Can't be like that. So, they are not here. You are going to give me direction, but let's allow the Eastern Cape to present what they have before us, and then we engage on it. But if I have been, the one I want to ask, I was looking at it in the Nelson Mandela. But let's listen to the Eastern Cape
and make some comments on it, and then we take a decision. Mm-hmm. I've seen your hand. I don't know whether I'm
Chairperson, yes, I just want to be supportive of what you've just said. I think it is totally unacceptable. To me, I think it's as if Nelson Mandela are just openly defying coming before this committee. It's of critical importance that we deal with some of these issues that arise. Just want to say that you have our support, Chairperson, and that indeed they do need now to be summoned to our next meeting to be answered.
Good afternoon, Honourable Chair, members and colleagues. My name is Suresh Kalitya from Department of Human Settlements, Head of Project Management and Quality Assurance. I have here with me Dr. Banga and Po Ndoni. Po is going to go through the details of the presentation. And on behalf of the Eastern Cape, let me apologize to you. I think we are in the Eastern Cape and Metro Nelson Mandela is in Eastern Cape. So we also have a responsibility to bring them when we are requested to do so. So my humble apologies, Chair, and this matter will be taken up with the accounting officer and the MEC so that we will be able to resolve this. And once again, my humble and honest apology. Chair, this is a long, outstanding matter. And just to give you a bit of a background, Tabalisha Homes was assisting the human settlements as well as Nelson Mandela Metro in terms of implementing Zanenvula projects. I'm just going to give the background and Bo is going to go through the details, but if you wish, I can ask Bo to take you through so that we can save time so that we'll be able to answer the questions. Chair, the project consists of 950 units that was not completed and it's part of rectification as well. Tabalisha Homes appointed two main contractors, that has been Varen Builders and Nomagwai. And during the construction process, Nomagwai indicated to Tabalisha Homes, being the principal agent, that they don't have the capacity and they wanted to hand over the 475 units that has been allocated. And those 475 units was again handed over to Varen Builders, who was one of the main contractors, and they continued with the construction. And Metro Builders, it's in normal construction industry that they are allowed, even the government regulations do allow to bring, and it is a requirement to bring the subcontractors, and they have brought in subcontractors to build. And as usual, you normally don't find a contract that is normal again, because that was arrangement, and therefore there were sessions, various sessions was involved in here, and the payments were done for the work that has been done. I think Mbo is going to take you through on the details and sequence of events. And the matter was presented to SCOPA, Portfolio Committee, the Premier of the Eastern Cape, the Petition Commission, and it has gone to all the platforms. And we have also entertained and we have also looked at, yes, there is no contract, but is the main contractor has done something wrong to the subcontractor? So we ask them to bring their invoices so that we can evaluate and see whether it can be paid. And we have gone through that process, and the results have shown that there's no legitimate claim that we can process, which is contributing to a subsidy and to a beneficiary and to a house. So therefore, we were unable to process that claim or even consider. Let me hand over to Mpo to take you through the presentation. Thank you, Chair. Yes, Honourable Chair. and we have confirmed with the main contractor, Baron Builders, they don't have any outstanding payments to Baron Builders as well. And Baron Builders, we have also interacted with Baron Builders, and they are more than willing to come and give evidence to say that, to demonstrate that they don't have any outstanding payments towards any subcontractors.
The assurance from the main contractor that they've paid all the outstanding amounts to the subcontractors. When did you get that assurance?
Chair, I won't be able to remember the exact date, but it was during the time that we were taken to the Petition Commission in the Eastern Cape. It was 2012-13, Honourable Chair.
2012-13. This is what is in front of you, as it has been sent yesterday to the members through the office of the chair. My presentation covers the following 2-4 contents: the background, construction arrangements, platforms to address the matter, and recommendations. Tubelisha was appointed to undertake the construction of 950 units at Joe Slovo, situated in Nelson Mandela Municipality. Two contractors, Veren Construction, Nomagwai Developers, were employed to construct 475 units each. Contractual arrangement and payments. Agreements were entered between Tubelisha Homes and two contractors, that is Nomagwai Developers and Veren Builders, for construction of 475 units each in July 2008. In August 2009, Nomagwai Developers wrote to Tubelisha and requested that they be allowed to withdraw from their contract with Tubelisha as they were about to be liquidated. After the withdrawal of Nomagwai Developers, the remainder of sites were reallocated to the current contractor on site. Tubelisha then entered into an addendum of agreement with Veren Builders for the completion of units not finished by Nomagwai Developers, accepting all contractual obligations and commitments. Veren Builders provided construction insurances, public liability insurance, warranty of housing with NHBRC FUR. Then Veren Builders appointed subcontractors working under Nomagwai Developers. Upon value created on site and certification of work invoices were submitted with letter of construction to pay what is due to the subcontractors by Veren Builders. Metro Builders as a subcontractor was paid via the above arrangement, taking all due process into consideration and more than 2 million claims of value created. All houses built on site and certified by NHRC issued with FURs under the name of the main contractor, which is Veren Builders. After numerous meetings with Metro Builders to try to resolve the matter within confines of the law and administrative processes, they took the matter further to the following platforms. We went to the Provincial Human Settlement Portfolio. I was also there. Provincial Petition and Arbitration Commission.
I was part of the Office of the Premier and the National Department of Human Settlements. The Eastern Cape Department of Human Settlements presented the above report with supporting documentation. This matter is supported by findings from Tubelicha Closeout Report, which is with National also. All money is due for value created on site and certified by the principal agent were paid in full for the project. Recommendations. It is recommended that the Portfolio Committee of Human Settlements take note of the report.
Can you unpack us to ask what does that mean?
We do not understand the meaning of this clause. Tell us what does that clause mean? This clause means to us.
Chair Mayors, Chair, I think what we are trying to do is there was a petition or a complaint lodged before the Portfolio Committee, and we are presenting evidence what due processes that we have followed in terms of trying to resolve this matter, even long before it came to the National Portfolio Committee. So we are saying...
We've got a responsibility and obligation here. We've got an obligation. So we want to know that message to us. Unpack it. What does it mean to us? You tell me that we have done all those things, then let's forget about it. That's what you are telling us. Let's forget about the issue because we have dealt with it and we have closed it.
Honorable Chairperson and honorable members, maybe just to come straight to that recommendation, we are presenting before the committee the facts of the claim by the contractor. The point we are raising that we have done our own assessment of the situation, and in so far as assessment indicates, we don't see a legitimate claim, I think, from the bank.
What are you saying to us? Let's take note of what we have done. And then we forget that because we have done everything. So you are saying, so it's well and good. Let's say it's well and good. Before I miscalculated the hypo because this is already second total accounting. Because what you should have done, withdraw that, you clearly, here we are presenting a report to the Portfolio Committee, what has been done so far. And we believe that, but don't, just withdraw that.
Chair, we will withdraw that, Chair.
It's an offense to us.
We will withdraw that. Our humble apologies once again.
Yeah.
We will withdraw that.
Chair, and then also one point. Mr. Ba is saying to us, they are satisfied with the report that they are getting from the principal and the conductor. They are not saying to us whether they are satisfied with the report from the second conductor.
Yeah, I'm not going to talk about Kaulele, it says that we are coming to that one. I wanted to go to the Kaulele instruction to the Portfolio Committee. Let's be clear what is the message to us as the Portfolio Committee. We are coming to the other issues, which is, have they met with these people, what happened, and so on. We are coming to that. Members, there's the presentation. Honorable Gomen, Mama Njobe, so far, so good. Honorable Mashish.
Thank you, Chairperson. I want to say that as a report coming to this committee, and just coming in cold to see what has happened here, it doesn't give me as a member of this committee anything to work on. We talk about the 475 units for each of the contractors, which was issued in July 2008. In August, Namagwai rights to say that they can't fulfill this requirement. Now, I don't know whether they built any units in the meantime, in that year. I don't know how much money we are talking about when we say that there was the withdrawal of the developers. The remaining sites seem to indicate to me that there was some building that did happen under Mugwai. Now, I don't know that. This is what you're going to tell us. And then also the finances that were paid over. I think we need to also see the accountability in how much there was for the project and how much was actually paid over, so that we can also have a better picture of what's going on here.
Yeah, Chairperson, I'm partly covered by the Honourable and I was going to say, we've got the figures on the units, for example, but you're not giving us figures of how much you paid, is it? Because the complaints are all about money, and therefore it would have helped that if, for instance, you had actually shown, you know, how much you have paid these people before you closed the whole problem. Now, the second question, Chairperson, is I think Mr. Machoba raised this point. All right, we've got this report, and the report, as far as I'm concerned, is closing everything. They have done what they could, that is the province, and as far as they are concerned, the matter is closed. Now, I wanted to find out whether the people who are complaining to us, have they got the same understanding as yourself? Because if they have the same understanding as yourself and they accept it, then the matter should be closed. But now if they don't have the same understanding, and it is seen as if they don't have the same understanding, what are you doing about it?
Chairperson, you covered me partly, but what I wanted to check with them, they should just give us the report in writing after meeting with those complainants.
Honorable Suga is a member of parliament, and the constituency are KLA State and I. And in this committee, TINAC, we allow members of parliament, in fact, zonke committees, they allow members of committee of parliament to come and listen to the issues that are affecting their constituents. And we are wondering because by them valele on a contract of the Eastern Cape with constituency office yaki. So I don't think how bang I would have been on a report according to him. And then was no disaster. Honorable Sura, I'm giving you a platform.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Chairperson, I must appreciate this presentation that is being made by the department. But maybe what I want to say first is that I want to urge you to have passion as a department, as a government, when responding to members of parliament, Chairperson. The ANC government is a caring government, and when you speak in committees, you speak under oath. I also want to remind you, Chairperson, this report does not tell a story. It's very big for members of parliament, and if you say to us, you must go back and respond and report what you have written here with a big font, less substance, I don't think I take it very kind. You must not treat members of parliament as if they are ignorant. Give us flesh in the bones so that we become proud. Because what makes a good MP, a public representative, is information. It's not a wishy-washy information. Don't respond as if also you are hiding something that we don't know. Because you are under pressure on the ground.
So you are responding as if you say, let's sweep it under the carpet so that it's done. Because if it was a good report and good work, we should not have been sitting here receiving petitions on behalf of those contractors. Now, chairperson, it means to us that surely there's a serious problem in the construction of our houses by contractors. And you are the agents to see the, to that people are happy. Firstly, we were met by not less than 5 contractors to say there's nothing paid, yet people are staying in the houses that they've built. And as such, they could not get joy. They are being tossed from pillar to post, especially between the metro and the province. We don't know what's happening. And this is an old project. It's an old project. Also in that one, we are very slow. You are very slow in responding to those needs of people. I mean, if you are seated here as government, listening to this, of a project of 1992-2007, and now it's 2014, I mean, what does it tell to us? So you are putting us under spotlight unnecessarily. So, Chair, Kelvin, let I take this view to say, let them give us a good quality report and invite the metro. And if it's possible, even if you invite one or two members of the subcontractors who submitted a complaint to you, so that we can lay the case to rest. Otherwise, yeah, when it's not quantified by figures and houses, and in fact, maybe because these are few houses, the list of beneficiaries and so on, they can tell the story, so that we close this matter very nicely. If you faltered in what you have done, please tell us, so that we correct it as a current government. We cannot be treated as if we are a wishy-washy department of human settlement that is unable or does not have capacity to deal with these matters. This is not a good report. I can't report this thing. So the matter needs to further investigation or reporting, Chairperson. Thank you.
I I think the issue of subcontractors, we were in a process of inviting them because we cannot listen. We don't listen on one side. But we were giving the opportunity for government. Now, seemingly, government is not coming up with a quality report. With an honest report. Because if they were honest, we would touch all the issues as government. And then we invite the people who are affected. Now, we're not getting any joy. Now, I think in the next meeting, we're going to invite the affected people. And then as well, I'm going to declare just because this has got here is a house. So, I'm going to there. Until the 14th of this month. These matters, two matters, are going to be closed up by this parliament. Here the resolutions are going to be taken by this parliament so that the next parliament implements them. So, this report is saying, after numerous meetings with the metro builders, but it's not metro builders, there are so many now, with me, but there's quite a lot of them. You try to resolve the matter within the confines of the law and administrative processes. So then they took the matter further to the following platforms because they were not satisfied. To the Provincial Human Settlements Committee, we want a report. What is the outcome? You are not telling us anything if you don't bring the outcome of that portfolio committee. Provincial Petition and Arbitration Commission, APA report, we welcome an ILAPI report, but in the corner. Because we have to look the outcome. Office of the Premier, where is the report outcome?
abala ku National Department of Human Services akanazo anto. Kodwa yasuka kubo, tell us, nina nina osaphambi kwethu, tell us, what have you done? Never. So, in fact, you don't have to tell us now. Sometimes those people, you know, they are, you know, so that the cities might be the other one. So that the city, are you aware of this and this and this and that? So if that's the way the state is, what is your problem? Then people are going to interact, because we are the people who have got the obligation to interact with the citizens. So if citizens don't understand that, we need to know the information is clear and credible. So that life is supposed to assist that we start to say. It is our responsibility. So, if we are going to put my postpone this meeting, God, we postpone and we lead him to blah, we and blah, recommendations are spell of sack. We know recommendations are spell. Spell of sack of Bussit, we are giving you a mandate as this portfolio committee. Namhlanje ngolwesithathu kusukela ngomso kubekho i-team esetwayo from i-National Department ezawudibana ne-Eastern Cape Provincial Department ne-Nelson Mandela. Well, first of all, what was the role of the Nelson Mandela? Kuyo yonke le process, yona nto ebalulekileyo. Bangandiqhawula kuzo. The implement project kwi-jurisdiction yayo. What was the role of Nelson Mandela?
The municipality in that case was a landowner. Obviously, he supports the development within its territory and is part of other issues that are relating to the project. Because you will see, Madam Chair, that this was under the tubelicha.
And if I got you correctly, there was a cooperative agreement. So what was the content of the cooperative agreement? There was a stage where this agreement had to be amended. So still then we need to know what were the issues on the amendment. But firstly we understand the initial and then we get to, so that want to know what is the role of the municipality, because that development, at the end of the day, those houses are going to be left to that municipality. That municipality has to take a responsibility of maintenance and so on and so on, and verifying if the people are still there. So let's agree, you have to don't have it today. We'll bring it. Well, tomorrow, set up, we set up a team. That team goes to Eastern Cape on Monday. I took it. You meet with the province, Nelson Mandela. You check how this matter has been addressed. You call those contractors. You interact with them. Don't I get to say the reporters who sign that form? Then, by Wednesday, we need a written report. You are at Tafilinyam. We'll see if on Friday you won't set up a meeting, committee meeting. Because, as I said, we want these things to be dealt with and closed by this portfolio committee. It means by Friday, Tina, we'll invite those contractors to come here. We may have a separate meeting first. We listen to you, what you have done, and then we can call them and interact with them. But it will depend how the process will unfold. But by next week, our phone is home. So if it means the service is 24 hours, you have to do that.
So that when you go to Dambu, there is an envula, Cheti 600. These numbers and all the, when they are calling them, but we need all the 100 what. And if it was an envula, Cheti 600 before, and then change it to 950, all the information we didn't go.
In fact, it's not one. All those. We can't apply office in Randolph. Go and get information. Some of the contractors. And the contractors. Then you can divide it and go and answer and the institution they have enough cook. I can't afford to have those things. I can't. Who's okay with that? Oh, and guess what?
No, Chair, I'm feeling up into the back because, Chair, I think it will be proper where I'm sitting with Tubelisha to give sort of a background of where the whole matter started, particularly from the, because Mbapachaba is also mentioning the issue of EJD 600 as well.
No. We have closed this matter. We are late. Only after one. And go to Senegal House. Senegal into a new town. So, for next week, Nina and the Tamba, no, when you say this, you will bring that report. You will bring that report next week. Nina, don't get up. You know, some other than you are going to someone to Maria Kwana Friday at the bottom line. New town. Never put time. All challenges, Linda. You have a corner about the affected people here in this room. This is the presentation that you have received.
Yes.
Where did you get this information? Before you start.
It's information that we have collected from all the documents that we've been presenting to the portfolio committee. But this one is just going straight to the closure of where we are with the after the infection.
Where do you get this information? You got it from the document that you have been presenting. It means you are bringing the very same information that you presented to us.
But you do not have the conclusion of what happened to the evictees.
Okay. Go straight to the conclusion.
Whilst we're trying to get to the screen on, there were two areas of concern that were raised with the evictees. It was the kids going to school. It was also the invalid. And the question was, what happened to them? And so we went out with the city and the social department of the city, which was dealing with the matter, and they gave us the whereabouts of the point in time, all the children were taken by their parents and moved to other places. We could not trace them, but they are all no longer there at Newtown. No. Including the invalid person. There is no trace of what happened to him. Unfortunately, I cannot give you the information, but she's also moved away from the place. But there was a proposition to be, that was given to her by the city to be taken to another shelter. Apparently, she refused to support her.
What's that, person?
In the city.
What was the name of that particular person?
I don't think I have the name on this document. I don't have names on this presentation.
Which document are we dealing with? Which one? Oh, I was going to tell you.
Can you say it, Ms. McClure? Listen, the response here was sort of giving the portfolio committee the assurance that everyone that was affected had been taken care of through the city of Joburg, and therefore the part of the department on that matter has been completed.
Okay, thank you. Mo, I'm sure you are listening, you know, CFO. This message is directed to you. Carry that mandate to the DJ. Because with the union announcement, man of some young money and DJ, some DJ and intimidate. You can't bring this report. This report says nothing. We said we want the affected persons here. Suzu Mamela Nina, on your side. The Mbuza Ngabom Uchiran Uchiles report has never been a Uitai KP. Umam Chabu, who gave her something? Umam Chabu, who gave this? This is not a report of the National Department. Ubega watu honorable Suda, Sanu Dalangat. As per your email, this is from City of Johannesburg response, Newtown Co-ops, which means there has never been a meeting. As per your email and our telephonic discussion, please find attached the reports that were provided in terms of the Newtown matter. Both were, I believe, discussed at previous portfolio committee sessions. Additionally, I need to provide you with the extent to which the City of Johannesburg Housing thereby engaged with the matter. Those are the issues, Mrs. Kumenela, the department. This is a report. Sitting on the department. Mo, yeah. There's nothing that you have done as the National Department. There are no efforts. You are getting a report. All those things, those people, on Lulibala, Obeba, Usuplesha, Wakontoni, this is the information that is given by the City of Johannesburg to our department that is supposed to go and do the homework here. Now you are telling us what have come down Bongo want to know what's going on. Then we know. This report is unacceptable. None of that. This is not your report.
Yet in the Bayama cooperative, that touch right decision on 2005. Which was a cooperative movement in this country. And in the resource on the corner that building back is a one of the things. But that's how she did. So that's funale. But to cut matters short, honorable member, this is our end. The phone at 12, phone at the affected person, Mu. Gobanina, you have failed us. It must be on record. Must be on record that you have failed us as the portfolio committee on this matter. We are going to look for the affected persons. We will not wait. Mazozala. Mazoniki side of their story. Nena, we forget about you on this matter. Thank you very much, honorable members. The meeting is adjourned.